Hear one of them fancy talking Yankees from New York.
New York coming down here to fucking all manner of tomfoolery, trickery, and fuckery.
That's it, man. Tomfoolery, trickery, and fuckery. I ain't bending no knee. I'm a hard-nosed Confederate, man. I still got them stars and bars. You ain't gonna buffalo me, boy. But you might trick me. You might trick me with simple misdirection.
Oh, damn, look at him. He can pull his thumb off and put it back.
Welcome back to the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. I'm Dean. I'm joined by Matthew, and together we're going to be talking about The Cell. We're back at it once again. We are here. We are going to talk The Walking Dead. We are now 3 episodes into the season, right? 3 episodes, Matthew?
That's it, 3.
Okay, well, here we are. We started with some brains getting bashed in. We started then with a tiger, and now we've started with some torture by music. So,
yeah. Tarsem Sings The Cell, starring Jennifer Lopez. We're finally here.
Yes, awesome. D'Onofrio is a weirdo and has some wacky dreams. But I'm looking forward to getting into this one. And if this is your first time joining us, we're going to be spoiling the episode in a couple of minutes here. So if you haven't seen it, this is not one of those spoiler-free reviews that you read on one of those websites that suck. This is going to be an in-depth discussion.
Where we make one of those that dances around everything that happens so gingerly they say nothing? Great, yeah.
Yeah. We're not going to do that here. We're going to regale you with the brilliance and wisdom of dick and fart jokes while hacking our way through this episode. And then we'll probably have a couple of listener comments. We had some emails this week that we got to get to. At least we'll get to a couple of them. And we are going to work our way through this. But before all of that happens, we are going to be starting with our initial impressions. But before we do that, Matthew, you told me that somebody might be stopping by this week. Somebody might be stopping by the studio. Somebody famous.
That's true.
Might be stopping by the studio. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm very excited about it. I'm sure you have a lot of questions for this person.
Always. And
I'm looking forward to it because sometimes we do that. We are we're a pretty big show now. We have 957 million downloads a month, so we got like 45 times as many as the top shows combined, which is crazy. It's crazy.
We actually put Serial out of business. There's not going to be another season, guys,
because of us. Joe Rogan called me, and I had NPR on, so I put them on hold. And I was like, hey, what's going on, Rogan? And he's like, dude, what are you doing, man? How are you getting so many downloads? And I said, well, it's because we have a lot of celebrities stop by. And sometimes they swing by.
Important,
and they offer their
relevant celebrities.
Important, very big, huge celebrities that are appearing in several films and TV shows at the moment. And that's how we do it. That's what we do. We're fucking true monsters now. And the rest of you guys out there, just keep practicing, okay? Keep practicing. Keep putting your voices to tape. And eventually, I'm thinking you're probably able to get the kind of heavyweights that we get in studio sometimes.
And I know the most impressive thing about all of this is that we've managed to stay so humble.
Yeah, well, you know, the facts really speak for themselves. And, you know, if I think out of the 47,233 Walking Dead podcasts, I think we're in the top 10. So that's pretty cool.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah, you know, there's a few podcasts out there. I could probably fill the fucking Superdome with podcasters of the Walking Dead.
With Walking Dead refugee podcasts huddling cold in the Superdome.
Yeah, while law enforcement just goes through and murders them.
Jesus. What kind of start is this?
Well, that's only certain color Walking Dead podcasters. You know how that goes.
So if you're a first-time listener of our show,
yeah, if we haven't alienated you, awesome. That means you're gonna get through this. If you're somebody who writes in reviews things like, you know, transphobic and stuff and get with the times, it's 2016, then this definitely isn't for you. Change the channel immediately. Because if there's one thing Matthew Matthew and I were in the bathroom the other day, standing next to each other in the urinal, and he said to me, he said, "Do you know what terrifies me, Dean?" And I said, "Oh, when your co-host talks to you while you're taking a piss?" And he said, "Nope. You know what terrifies me? Transsexuals." Oh, I am terrified of them, he told me. Literally afraid. And I said, "I think if you're afraid, that means you're transphobic, because I'm pretty sure we've been called that too." So anyway, this is an odd opening. I didn't know. This is unscripted. Clearly. Maybe we should think about scripting it. I don't know. But here we are.
Here we are.
We're here. So, despite Matt's overwhelming phobias. That every shadow, that in every corner, in every nook and cranny.
My
every
monstrous bigotries and phobias.
Yes.
Clouding out every moment of the show.
He's terrified that at any moment, somebody that is not white and blonde with blue eyes could perhaps leap out and engage him in conversation.
You mean those exist?
Yes, they do. And I know, Grandpa, despite your hard work. Back in the day, you have yet
despite all your union crack and skull work, just fucking getting to it.
Yeah. Sometimes we do this. Fuck. We talk about shit because we don't know what else to talk about because we're not good at this. Actually, that's not true. We've already established that we're the top 10 of the 47,000 podcasts that are about Walking Dead and that we currently get 975 billion downloads a month, which is why, circling back, we got an in-studio guest that's going to show up today. A big time A-lister, and he's going to talk a little bit. I know Matt has a battery of questions for this particular person, but I think we should probably just get to our initial impressions. What do you think, Matt?
I think so. It's about that time.
Because I don't know what just happened for the past 10 minutes, but it did.
We both went into a fugue state and just kept talking.
Matt.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Hey.
I'm going to let you talk. I'm going to be over here. I'm going to be sitting down. Reflecting on what I just did.
Fanning yourself like an old lady in church, just, oh.
Yeah, like, it's one of those churches where there's a couple of cypress outside. It's probably just outside of Louisiana. I'm fanning myself. I got hair that's mercy. So white, it's blue, you know? Oh, Lord, oh, mercy. Mercy, I don't know what overcame me. Well, again, I'll be over here.
All right. All right.
So,
well.
You take over because I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, as far as this episode of television we're here to cover, I'm actually pretty on board. I think it's a pretty good episode. I understand the naysayers of it's pretty slow. I feel like from episode one to here in just three episodes, it has slowed way down from the pace it was at. And it was definitely not as fun of an episode to watch as the last one because, I mean, fuck, King Ezekiel. Fucking Shiva. It's just fun. I mean, it's a big, crazy comic book episode with a damn tiger on a chain. It's a wild time. And we got to see characters that we, you know, our beloved Morgan and Carol were back, and it was a fun time to see them again. This is a back to the darkness of the Saviors and Negan and the situation with Daryl. But I enjoyed the kind of, you know, I guess you could call it fairly basic, but it was pretty well done. These like psychological parallels of Dwight and Daryl. Oh, double D's all around. Fucking, of course, they have so much in common. But I really did like watching Dwight's expectations of Daryl over time. That was one of the most interesting things about this. I think the real opportunity this season has with this show is to introduce a lot of new characters and introduce them well. And I think I would say, for one, I'm actually fairly impressed at how far back this show introduced Dwight and has changed him over time already, and I think he's got a long way to go. I think he's going to end up being, I really do think he's going to be a mainstay of the show, a regular come the end of this season or especially, you know, midway through the next. I think Dwight's going to be one of the big guys around and somebody we're really focusing on. So I really like where we're going with him, even though this episode isn't action fucking packed. The trajectory I now envision for that character is interesting. I think they got some good shit here. I worry and wonder about Daryl. Makes me wonder how much longer Daryl's going to be around. Although I can see a couple of ways that we could extend his story arc in a way. I think he's going to have to adopt some fucking Carol-esque foxy cleverness and disguise work in order to survive. But yeah, no, overall, I enjoyed this episode. I thought it was actually pretty solid. Pretty good. Pretty good time in the Walking Dead universe. How about you?
Boy, I'll tell you. I need to unfuck myself, I think.
All right.
Because I am
not so, feeling it.
Yeah, no, here's what I think. So my initial impressions of this episode are this. Because I want to, I don't want my sourness. My, here's the problem. I am not a grudge holder. Unless your sins against me are really egregious, I am very much a turn the other cheek kind of guy. I don't got time to hold grudges. I'm not that kind of person, right? So when the season finale happened for the show last year, man, I was pissed and annoyed. And then I was like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm not going to allow myself to devote the time and energy to wonder beyond those first couple of weeks after the episode aired of who got killed. I said, I refuse to be pulled into your fucking quagmire. There's more interesting things for me to watch. Now, I think that there's still some residual bullshit left over. And I know what you're thinking as you hear me talking into your little fucking earbuds. You're thinking, get over it, dude. I totally hear you. And that's what I tell myself when I get in the mirror. I look in the mirror and I go, get over it, man. They fucked up, in your opinion. They fucked up how it ended. And you just got to move forward with your life. And that's what I'm trying to do here. And I feel like I was watching this episode and part of me felt like I was just really, they were really telegraphing something obvious to me, which is Dwight's dissatisfaction with Negan, which is obvious, despite yeah. Negan's real lack of perception about it, unless Negan's fooling all of us, which is possible.
I also think that.
And Dwight's eventual betrayal of Negan to get Daryl out of there. I mean, it seems so obvious that that's what they've set up in one episode very early on by showing us some of the dissent and the discontent that is on Mr. fucking Freddy Krueger face over here.
Half Freddy Krueger.
Half Freddy Krueger, yeah. He's more like the Phantom of the Opera. He's more like that guy. Fucking lurking in the shadows, singing to pretty girls from the dark.
Sondheim Krueger.
Yeah, there you go. And I don't think it's Sondheim, though. I think it's Andrew Lloyd Webber, but close.
There we go. I don't fucking know.
Stick to English, bitch.
Okay, Big Billy musicals fucking educate me. Big Billy Broadway is going to come through and tell me who wrote what.
When's the last time you saw a musical? 525,600 minutes?
Oh, God. And I just put the muzzle of a shotgun in my mouth.
You just private piled yourself?
Oh, big time.
I just put an M14 in my mouth and blew my brains all over a bathroom wall. Thanks, Dean. No, what I'm trying to say is this.
Hey, Dean, here's my dark ending to The King and I. Kabloom. All right, continue.
All right. Let me get back on track here before I bifurcate all over myself.
Fuck.
Forever. You're fucked.
Forever. Fucking... You're my fucked. Only hope is to say even more obnoxious words and just get add to the vocabulary until you can't keep track of them anymore.
Drink your tea, bitch. All right, so I can hear you stirring it. I hear your little fucking teaspoon clanking around in your ceramic. No, but so part of me I'm going, oh, I see some of the dialogue. There's a couple of dialogue moments that I was like, ugh. But here's what I do know about the show. They are fucking leaning on Jeffrey Dean Morgan to make shit interesting. Because how interesting is this episode if he's not in it? Is he charismatic enough to carry this whole fucking storyline? Because they're really leaning on him for this. Because Daryl is just an annoying, sort of dirty, disgusting...
You mean Dwight or Daryl?
I'm sorry, Daryl. They both are. But Daryl is just a disgusting hillbilly who's like chained up, like fucking, I don't know. And then you got Dwight, who's doing his thing. Now, here's one thing that this episode did successfully as I was watching it. Dwight obviously became more interesting than Daryl.
Yeah.
That happened in an instant. I know that there is a growing movement of the anti-Daryl crew, and then I know there's the loyalists. The loyalists love Daryl. Most of them are women, and most of them are Daryl loyalists because of his arms and his attitude, which I'm fine with, because I admit I have been fans of people for their body parts too, and it's okay. I'm just saying that... For me, he's grown really less interesting over time. Now, let's not forget that Dwight shot a crossbow bolt through Denise's eye socket and killed
him.
That's easy to forget about when you're watching this episode. Shot a crossbow bolt through her eyeball, and she fell on the ground and did some twitching and died. So he murdered her, was trying to shoot somebody else. Doesn't matter. Now they're trying to... This is something we've seen before. So it's a bit formulaic from The Walking Dead, isn't it? Didn't we see the governor go through a situation where he was this murderous asshole, and then they tried to make him look like Jesus with a dead kid in the window with the beard and the fucking, you know, and then he kills the guy with emphysema with the fucking tanks smashing his head in.
Do you think what they're doing with Dwight is retreading that governor territory?
I think they're retreading the idea that here is a character that's been pretty menacing in the past, and now they're going to start to humanize him so we feel something for him a little bit.
Yeah.
But here's where I think they're going to differ. I don't think that Dwight is going to revert to his old ways, whereas the governor did, right?
Yeah.
I liked some of that shit with the governor where they showed us it was like an origin story by showing the way he took over the crew, his new crew. It was almost like seeing this is probably what he did to get the Woodbury crew and blah, blah. I don't want to get off on a tangent on that. But,
yeah, no, I agree. I like that too.
But with Dwight, I think it's going to be different. Now, they're telegraphing that Dwight is going to, you read it differently. You read it as they're building Dwight up and he's going to be around for a while. You're projecting even into the next season. I feel like they're telegraphing Dwight to be somebody who is going to go against Negan.
I
definitely feel that, but I know you think that too, but I think he's going to go against Negan and get himself killed springing Daryl. Now that would be the predictable thing to do.
Mm.
What would be fascinating is if Dwight somehow escaped as a result of Daryl's sacrifice. That would be ballsy. I don't know if they would do that because I don't know if they're ready to bump Daryl off, but he really has lost his appeal to me over time. Because he isn't doing anything yet, right? It's kind of like the same old... So when Daryl's with the group, he's like, oh, I'm pissed off, I'm Daryl. I'm going to go out and drive my bike. Brr, I'm Daryl. I'm going to fucking eat squirrels. And now he's with Negan's crew, and he's like, I'm fucking Daryl. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to... It's like there's no real... His character doesn't change a lot. Like, he's doing the same thing despite his circumstances. He's being a hard-nosed, stubborn guy. Am I reading that wrong? Can you help me come around on that?
To be honest, I do think you're right. I think that the show has not done a great job of using Daryl in new... Really, the only thing we've seen from Daryl in the past, I don't know, season and a half, maybe two seasons, is him having typical to Daryl, harder time to adjusting to life within walls and within a community again. Oh, and then he's exposed to some new people, and he's starting to slowly come around on some people. That's it. Right. I've pretty much summarized all of what's happened with Daryl for the past, all the episodes he's appeared in for the past two seasons. You know,
that's crazy.
It's not much. It's not a lot. I mean, I think Daryl, for one, I think he's interesting in that he's such a consistent character. Like, you do not see him. Like, we've had the mixed feelings about Carol because of her. She took this hard stand and became this really hard charging person, maybe the most cold and fierce of them all, and now she's suddenly having this guilt about it. The guilt seemed to come pretty quick, and we were like, sure. Is that? I don't know. Get Daryl, you could definitely say he has been Daryl from day one. Like, that is of any character on the show where I think there's been any problems in continuity, or are they behaving like they would behave? I don't think you can. I can't think of anything off the top of my head where I'm like, oh, they didn't write Daryl the way they should have written him here or something. You know, that doesn't jump to mind.
Right.
But... Yeah, no, so I agree. I guess if I'm going to jump to a prediction, this is a pretty long-range prediction. This is not like, oh, by next episode, I think this is going to happen. But I think as far as, like, Dwight's place in the show, I don't think this episode is laying a foundation for I'm going to spring Daryl. I think it's laying the foundation for it takes looking at someone else, maybe somebody who resembles me, to make me realize how truly unhappy with this I am, and I want to foment an uprising against Negan. Like, okay. Not that I want to spring Daryl, it's just watching Daryl and watching him have the composure to not bend the knee yet when he did is like, fuck, he's right. I shouldn't bend the knee. I should fucking fight back against this obviously evil tyrant. I think it's going to be more that situation.
So you think Dwight would spring Daryl just because he sees himself in Daryl, essentially?
I don't think he tries to spring him at all. I don't think he tries to get Daryl out, period.
Do you think that his uprising, so perhaps his interactions with Daryl will end up being something where he is sympathetic or reminded of, and then he just does his own thing, and maybe Daryl's part of that, maybe he's not, but Dwight's not really caring.
Or that it just doesn't have so much direct connection to Daryl, that it's more like that it took watching sure. somebody other than himself to realize something about himself, and that's the key for him.
I got it.
Because we
like
see
it.
That a couple times in this episode, him watching the zombies, you know, there's a lot of him not realizing things about himself until he's watching something else experience it. Like, one of my, to be honest, on my first watch through this episode, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fine. I was like, yeah, you know, it's pretty decent episode. My second go around, I liked it even more. That's why I sound as positive about it as I do now.
Sure.
But one of my favorite shots is actually right here near the beginning when he's sitting outside after, you know, collecting all the shit he gets to make this nice sandwich, and he's getting ready to take a bite, and he sees this zombie. I love the way they shot it, I'll admit. Like, the zombie is kneeling, and it stands up, but it's impaled to this long, tall pole. And so it stands all the way up, but it's never able to stand up past the point of the pole. So it ends up just falling back down to its knees again. It's just forever stuck on this pole. It can never stand up past it. And he's just sitting there watching that. Like, the look on his face, he is so intensely watching that zombie stand up, struggling to stand up, and it can't get off of it, and it just goes right back down to its knees. And it's like, that's you, buddy. That's you. No matter how, you're a big man here now. You're a big man on campus, but you are still Negan's bitch, and you fucking kneel to him every time he comes around. Like, you are, the truth of your situation is this.
Interesting. Yeah, what do you think about their decision to say, let's go ahead and do something with Dwight this season?
Yeah.
There's a lot of characters out there. There's a lot of characters that we could learn about. What do you think about this? Because they're not really giving you what I thought was interesting about this episode. They're not really giving you Daryl's POV. This is totally Dwight POV, and Daryl just happens to be in the episode.
That's true. You know, Daryl is still kind of like an enigma to us, even. Like, we're watching him suffer, but we're not getting any idea of how he thinks or feels about that suffering.
Right. And what's weird is I'm trying to think of how they're going to elicit something out of me regarding Daryl, because there was a moment here where I thought, and we'll get to it, but teaser, I thought that Negan was going to kill Dwight right on the spot.
Ooh.
And that's something I actually like about what Negan brings to the table, but it also, in liking it, it makes me wonder about his leadership style, and some of that stuff we need to talk about, because I'm shocked there hasn't been an insurrection yet, but we can talk a little bit about that. It's a Dwight POV episode with Daryl just sort of in the mix. Which is funny for us, because Daryl is an original person. And, I mean, we get his POV when he's getting woken up by the music and the torture, or should I say psychological warfare operations. That's the the nice way to say it.
That's that real clean CIA documents way of putting it.
Yeah, fucking psychological warfare, psychological operations they're conducting on Daryl.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But it's just funny that they decided they're going to use Dwight, that he's going to be the way they go. Now, part of me thinks when I see that, I go, part of me just, and I don't know why, I go, oh, okay, they're going to use Dwight, whatever. I see what they're doing. It's so obvious. But I don't necessarily know if obvious bothers me. I just want it to be compelling. So when you're, and I know you're high in this episode, when you sit and you watch this episode, are you thinking, this is very interesting, I can't wait to see where this goes? What do you ultimately feel?
As far as feeling, I feel, you know, concern, obviously, for Daryl. And I'm definitely really intrigued about, will Daryl, like I was, you know, kind of saying at the top, like, will he bend the knee in some kind of Carol-esque way of, I'm doing this, but I'm not really doing this. Right. I'm doing this to get out of that situation, to get some fucking clothes on, some shoes, get out of this cell, and then kind of be forced to have some guile about him, like we've always talked about him not really having. That's interesting. It leaves me anticipating those possibilities. But I do like the idea of making Dwight you know, for one, I think it's necessary. I think it is, if it's not Dwight, it's got to be somebody. It is necessary for us to have an in on the Saviors outside of Negan. We need to be able to see what goes on there, how they behave, why they personally feel they should behave this way. Like, we have to see them as more than just one-dimensional fucking monsters, because it's like, it's not compelling to have them just be hyper evil and they're just, you know, they become stormtroopers. It's like, sure, just, they're just faceless evil that you can just haplessly shoot down and feel fine about. It's like, we gotta dig into these reasons. And I think Dwight is mostly our, you know, our portal into that weird little Savior world. And so I think there's enough. I find Dwight annoyingly interesting, and I mean that in the sense of, like, his character, I still don't like him yet. Like, I'm not like, oh, go Dwight. I'm like, you're still an asshole. Right. And I think you're a coward in a lot of ways. But as the episode progresses, I'm like, you were forced to be a coward in a really horrible situation.
Sure.
And it makes him interesting. So I do think there's a lot of, they've laid the groundwork to make Dwight a pretty interesting character.
I agree. I think they have too, after watching it again. So the good and the bad, I don't find myself caring about Daryl too much. The good, I am more interested in Dwight, because he finds himself in a more complex situation. Daryl's problem is that every time he's in a weird situation, he either fights or he flees. He's never really in a situation where he has to have some kind of decision-making process or compromise himself or do something to survive that's not pretty. And I'm hoping that they introduce that to him here and give us a different look at him. With Daryl, I feel like, and again, I don't memorize these episodes. I don't watch them more than twice. I don't watch them 10 times. I don't pause and read. I'm not a Walking Dead expert, despite the fact that I have a podcast about it with Matthew.
You have pretty good Walking Dead memories, but yeah.
Yeah, so I don't really know if I'm missing something, but I feel like most of the things, you know, Beth leaves, he goes after Beth. Carol leaves, he goes after Carol. He does, you know, there's not a lot going on with Daryl, I feel like. I feel like most of the interesting things that occurred with Daryl really centered around Merle and that dynamic and having him being in a weird position. And sometimes in the very beginning, when Daryl was kind of he was almost like an antagonist. We didn't know about Daryl. There was conflict with Daryl.
This is true. And you saying that, if I had to give a percentage likelihood that I think they'll do this, it's low. It's like 20%.
But I wish they would, because I'm
guessing the ballsiness of having Dwight be the person who slowly starts to see the light, starts to pull away from Negan, start to be like, I really do need to get out of here or rebel against him. And Daryl going down the fucking dark side path and being like, yeah, I like it, actually. I'm actually for Negan, like, become the real right-hand, full-blown Kylo Ren of them.
Sure.
I don't think they'll do that. I think the fans would get so upset. But that's a ballsy move.
Yeah, I don't think they are going to do that, but I think it would be kind of cool. One of the issues with this whole thing is, and I know we're doing a lot of freewheeling here without actually going through the episode, but that's fine. One of the issues I have with this is the way Negan behaves, and I guess we're gonna have to get to that as those scenes come up. But at the end, putting the picture of dead Glenn up, I mean, that kind of shit is not going. That doesn't break people so much as it fuels people's hatred, man. And hatred can go for a long time, and hatred can become very dormant. And that idea of revenge, injustice. I mean, Jesus Christ, man! Read The Count of Monte Cristo, right?
Right.
He can sit on that hate a long fucking time and finally get his fucking revenge. I don't see why taunting him is what you would do. Which brings me back to Negan and this whole style of leadership and what it means and guys kneeling down and shit like this, man. We got to get into that shit.
Oh, yeah.
So, let's break into the cell.
So, Dwight, he begged me not to kill Sherry, which I thought was kind of cute, so I was just going to kill him. But then Sherry says that she will marry me if I let Dwight live, which, if you think about it, that's a pretty screwed up deal, because I was going to marry her sister until she wound up dead. But Sherry is super hot. Anyways, it was a start. But it wasn't enough. So Dwight, he got the iron. And then I married a super hot wife. Ex-wife. And then after all that, he still got on board. And now look at him. Bow! One of my top guys.
Well, we start off with a town called Dallas. What the fuck, dude?
So with some grainy VHS tapes.
This was real. This was real jarring for me. I was like, what is this silly fucking stupid show doing?
That we're going to come in?
Is silly.
On what? Who's the boss?
Yes.
Who's the boss? And you know, to further elucidate the inclusion of this.
Did you just say elucidate? You fucker.
See, step one in my fucking evil plan to keep injecting these words. But I brought in, like we've already been teasing, I brought in a friend to really give us the inside take on why Who's the Boss appears here where it does. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend, Tony Danza.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm going to just a second.
Wow, you brought a boombox in with your theme song. I didn't think you were going to do that one, Tony.
Hey, what's going on there, Matt?
Hey, bud. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. I just got off of Broadway. I was doing a couple of plays, you know, saying my lines.
Some Rodgers Hammersteins, some dancing
and
singing.
Yeah, you know,
tapping.
Rodgers Hammersteins. You know, he's good. What's going on? How'd you think of this episode there?
I enjoyed it. Did you, I gotta ask, did you get billed as part of, were you part of the cast of this episode? Did they actually give you that?
I tell you what, there, Nicotero called me up. I was a little bit busy. I was out, I had a couple of cocktails. I was trying to meet up with Mona again, because, you know, she's a piece of ass. And they said, hey, Tony Danza, we're going to use you, Who's the Boss? And I said, well, that's fine with me. Just got to send me a little bit of the cheese. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm... So they actually give you a... I don't think they gave you a guest star on here, which I thought is beneath you. That's, you know, hey, you know, you haven't been working like you used to, but you're still Tony fucking Danza, though, right?
Hey, I'm Tony fucking Danza. Catch me on Broadway, and I'm going to be doing Cats. I got my own whiskers picked out.
Oh, shit, really? They're letting you do that?
Yeah, I did a little bit of body training, know what I'm saying?
I guess that's all right. I don't know. I feel like that might be dangerous for you this day and age. Tony, you got to think about your hips and your knees.
Hey, what are you going to do? I'm a New Yorker. They make us a little bit different. Know what I'm saying?
Thank you so much, Tony, for coming by, giving us that sweet inside Walking Dead scoop. Better than these shit.
Listen, can I just give you a quick tip there, Matt?
Oh, sure.
Next time you're with your girl and you want to get a quickie in, just push the panties to the side. Know what I'm saying? Just hook your thumb in there and pull them over and get to work, okay?
You give me that tip every time we hang out, Tony.
All right. Take it easy.
Wow, that was awesome. Thanks for bringing them in, man. Wow. That was pretty crazy.
He always says that. That's it. That's becoming his catchphrase, if anything. You know, every time I call him a cab and he hops in, he says goodbye. And no matter what, he leans out the cab on the way down the street saying, hook the panties.
Really?
Every time.
So what's
I'm like, I remember, Tony. I remember.
It's crazy that it's crazy that they didn't even mention him. They must have just called somebody. I don't know what they're doing.
True.
But it's cool to have him stop by. Now you know why we get 970 billion downloads per month. So
that's it.
Hey, other podcasts, eat your heart out.
Those hot of the moment fucking television and movie stars.
Hot takes.
Fuck.
So Dwight's making a sandwich.
Making a sandwich. Gathering amongst... this sandwich must have taken all day to make. Like, you have had a bag of sandwich ingredients gathered over like 6 hours.
Right.
But it's I just, guess that's what it takes in the apocalypse.
This montage, for me, it's just kind of goofy.
It is weird. I mean, I get the effect they're going for is to be jarringly upbeat because, you know, for Dwight's position... This is how he gets to go about the day. He gets to kind of choose his life far more than most of these people.
Sure.
And so it's happy-go-lucky, essentially, for him. Like, he's literally fucking smearing mustard on his sandwich while some dude gets beaten to death because he didn't want to give over a can of beans or some shit. I don't really know. And then he goes over to that guy's wife and now newly bastardized son and fucking takes a jar of pickles out of his footlocker. For God's sake.
Dude, what kind of operation is Negan running here?
It is pretty rough. Nobody's living happy except for, like, there must be some kind of caste system of, like, sure. There's Negan as fucking top dog, absolute on top of the hierarchy. Then all of the guys like Dwight, there's no name for them yet. He just calls them, like, yo, you live like kings. It's like his enforcers or his, like, mafia lieutenants or some shit. And then there's all these people doing the work around there. And then I guess these untouchable fucking pieces of dog shit who go out and hook zombies up to the outside perimeter.
Sure, sure.
That looks like the system.
But the fact that Dwight's sitting here and he has some sort of higher or elevated position in this hierarchy, and these guys get into a fight and the dude literally is beaten to death and nobody intervenes.
No.
So I get that, but I also feel like, God damn, man, what kind of operation are you running over here?
Oof.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems... Yeah. So this is where I start to go, okay, all these guys are... They sort of bend the knee because it's a better life. Is it really a better life? I almost feel like sometimes I wish that we could get some... That's what I'm looking for. Some sort of parody in Negan's approach to where he starts to convince us, because what he's not going to do is he's not going to convince us based on what we're seeing that Daryl, he's not going to convince us that if Daryl bends the knee in this current iteration of the torture that we're going to go along with it. I want to see him convince the audience that Daryl should bend the knee versus us going, oh, don't do it, Daryl, don't do it. Does that make sense, what I'm saying
that
here?
That does. Yeah, I see what you mean. I think what we are, and maybe it's the show trying to drag out the mystery of it longer, but I think one of the things we're not really seeing, and we get a taste of it here with seeing, like what I was saying, with Dwight going about his life and how he gets to eat this delicious sandwich that he rips away like a fucking vulture from everybody else. But I think it's that the guys who are in Dwight's position, I think that encampment of guys is maybe the larger force. Like, there might be more of them than there are people who actually work the gardens and shit.
Sure.
And if there's not more of them, there's still a high enough number to keep those people scared. And he must treat those guys, once they are at that position, pretty well. I mean, what he was offering Daryl by the end of the episode, I guess you can wait to really get to that, but he was offering him, even just from what we could see, a pretty decent living situation.
Yeah, much better than he's used to, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially if there's going to be food involved, and apparently, you know, there's a pussy wagon. So there's that. As long as they're willing, I suppose. But in the chat, it should be mentioned, and we are recording this live on Mixler. So as I'm about to reference the chat, I'm going to tell you what that means. We record all our shows live on Mixler. That's Mixler.com/LSG-media. Mixler.com/LSG-media. In the chat, Sarah Torkelson says, I hope there's never an apocalypse. I don't want to work that hard for a damn egg sandwich. As simple as that sounds, when you think about this whole montage, if they didn't make it so silly with the music and show us Dwight and, you know, his current girlfriend, I guess, by the way, this guy punches way above his weight class all the time, right? Yeah. He was with some blonde chick with a nose ring who looks like, you know, she'd want to, like, sit down and listen to Riders on the Storm and, you know...
True.
Bone you after while listening
teach
to
a high school art class.
Yeah, teach a high school art class while, you know, and bone you while listening to Rider.
Buy cigarettes for 15-year-olds.
I could get into that, but
and she only had to do 8 shots to fuck Dwight.
He's always punching over his weight class, this guy, no doubt about it. Anyway, my point is maybe that was the point. That simple statement by Sarah in the chat could be exactly what they're trying to show us. Despite the silliness of the music, is just how hard it is to get such a simple thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
A thing that you even take for granted every day.
Exactly. And that even in this, you know, this camp where they are all, relatively speaking, safe from the outside world and everything, that it's still, you know, it's still very difficult to even get by.
Right. So yeah, it's quite the opening. It was a little jarring at first. I was like, "What in the fuck?" But hard cut to Walker noises after all this silly montage is going on, and You know, I see barriers, 5-gallon bottles on, some heads, some sweatshirts on, painted letters, the yard where these pikes and spikes are.
You know, I do. It's funny. I feel two ways about this outside zombie perimeter thing. I both really like it and go, oh, that is an interesting way to have a pretty effective, you know, slowing down the infantry that's invading perimeter, a moat of zombies. But then at the same time, the show has already established that zombies making noise attracts other zombies. So I'm kind of like, you're kind of bringing more of your problems to you at the same time. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe they count it, eh, we can handle zombies really easily. It's worth it to have a deterrent for people.
Right.
Eh.
So we get a shot of Daryl's existence, the contrast of Daryl's existence. We saw the delicious sandwich from Dwight, and now we see the fucking dog food sandwich that Daryl gets, which he takes greedily into his hands and stuffs it into his mouth like fucking Smeagol when he's eating fish.
Right.
And he loves
fucking
it.
Fucking face first.
Yep. Daryl's naked and greasy, so not much has changed other than he's not wearing clothes. And then, of course, right. Dwight feeds him the sandwich, which he eats up. And then we go right to our opening credits. We come back, and we go to our Easy Street music and, of course, the psychological operations on Daryl, which I kind of had a feeling was going on right away. When the music started, I was like, okay, this is going to be torture. This is torture by sound. They're keeping him up. They're waking him up in intervals. They're doing sleep deprivation. And just making it hard on him. We see him shivering at points. I'm guessing he's in a cold situation based on the way other people are dressed with, you know, Negan's wearing a jacket. People have long sleeves on and shit. I'm guessing it's a little chilly for him in there.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like there's any amenities. I mean, there's no fucking windows. There's no radiator. There's nothing in there. It's just a fucking hard slab floor room.
And then we have, we see Negan coming through. They're torturing Daryl. We get a whole montage. So we do like these back-to-back montages, more dog food sandwiches. But now at least he has clothing. They're building him up a little. The restarting of the song is so annoying just as a viewer. I was ready to break. I was like, all right, I love you, Walking Dead. I love you. You're the best.
I kneel to you, Walking Dead.
Fucking storytelling. Just shut the fucking song off.
Scott Gimple and his fucking patchy beard standing over you with his baseball bat.
Yeah, yeah. So Dwight finally takes Daryl out of the cell. There are a couple of jabronis mopping. Terrible moppers, by the way. Dwight takes Daryl to see Carson, a doctor. And in there, we see Dwight's ex-wife, Sherry, if you didn't remember her name, looking hot. And then she's not pregnant, apparently. White not pregnant, pink pregnant. She tries to talk to Daryl. Whatever they say, just do it. Dwight cuts her off. Dr. Carson tells Daryl that Negan will take care of him. So,
did you catch, there's a line of dialogue by the doctor here that's a little telling as well.
Yes.
That pregnancy test was only out because he was like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm getting used to being my own assistant. Like, he just lost an assistant. And I always have the feeling that within the Savior's compound, lines like that don't mean what they might in like the Hilltop or Alexandria, where they're like, oh, we lost somebody on a run or something like that. It's like, no, they fucked up and Negan killed them. Like,
sure,
they probably got offed because of something they did in here.
Yeah, I wondered about that. That wasn't the line I was thinking you were going to say. The other line was, he says, it'll heal if you let it.
He says that to her? Or he says that to Daryl. That's Daryl. Right.
Yeah.
Jesus.
You all right, buddy? Dropping shit. Jesus Christ.
Whew, all right. You're not going to edit that shit out, of course.
Of course not. What are you fucking spilling chamomile all over your dick? Calm down, will you?
Jesus Christ. But yeah, no, I did think that was interesting. Of like, I don't know if that was meant to be another like, you'll live if you have the fight to live in you, kid, kind of line. I don't know.
Sure. I like it. So were you shocked to see Sherry?
No. I was expecting this to happen at some point. I didn't think... that she was just a goner. I was like, yeah, she's going to be around this guy. And I've heard all the rumors and stuff about like, oh, Negan has like concubines and wives. And I'm like, that seems to me like she's going to be around.
So it's his ex-wife. We don't know that just yet, but that's coming up. But Dr. Carson does tell Negan after she exits, that Negan's going to take care of him. So there's what people are saying about Negan. And then there's what we're seeing with Negan. Now, is it at this point I should talk about it, or should I wait for, well, let's wait for them two to talk, because that's coming up here. And we'll get into it there. But out in the hall, they come across Negan. Everybody drops to their knees. They sit Daryl down in view of a fully furnished room, right? This is kind of a form of manipulation here.
Yeah.
While Dwight and Negan talk off camera. Dwight retrieves him, takes him to the pit. And this is where he's going to show him some shit.
Takes him out to the zombie pit.
To the pit. And Dwight's popping walkers with his new crossbow, obviously Daryl's, who pushes Daryl up against the fence. That's you, asshole, unless you're smart. Your choice. You can be like me or them, or me or them, or me or them, or me or them, he says.
I wonder, what are these letters they spray paint on them? They don't, they're obviously not an abbreviation for their name. You know, Dwight has an A, one of these guys has an F.
Dwight or Daryl has an A?
Daryl's got an A spray painted on him, along with all these other zombie tenders they have out there.
What were some of the letters?
One I saw was an F, so Daryl has an A, I saw an F. I feel like I saw a D maybe out there, I'm not sure, but I don't know if they just have, they just go by alphabet and we only keep 26 of these guys at a time or some shit.
Yeah, I guess. I couldn't tell you. The only thing I could think of the letters is some sort of inventory keeping purpose, but they would know their names, maybe it's just easier to have letters on them. Chat, Sarah says maybe that's something to do with the point system. It's possible. Maybe it's like Scarlet Letter. A stands for their crime or whatever, but that doesn't make any sense either.
You're an adulterer, Daryl.
Assault, that's it, right? He assaulted Negan. that's not what it is, but maybe it is. I don't know. Yeah, I couldn't quite figure that out, but he does put Daryl back into his cage. Make it easy on yourself, Dwight tells him. I ain't never going to kneel. Dwight says he said the same thing, and then, of course, the loud music starts again. And that's when we have this meeting between Negan and Dwight. He's going to go apeshit, Negan says, in his typical jovial, I'm the fucking king of the world attitude.
Big bro with a baseball bat.
The way he just sort of saunters up and leans against the pole, him and Dwight share a talk. What'd you think of this scene?
I mean, it is impossible to see Jeffrey Dean Morgan and not be fucking entertained. Like, that's like, they have impeccably casted Negan as far as being a watchable fucking character. So it is fun, I'll admit, to just watch him fucking deliver dialogue is even interesting. But he is kind of, I almost feel in a similar way that I do about Daryl with the way Negan is portrayed here of like, I don't get him at all yet. Like, we see him saying, hey, you're really coming up in the world. You got hustle. I like that. You're doing great, da, da, da. But, like, we don't get any real – he's hard to interpret, I would say. And I feel like that's part of all of this. I mean, for one, the psychological, you know, torture and conditioning that they're doing to Daryl is very fucking – methodical, fucking Christ, whatever. Methodical.
It's very mythological. They
it's
had
very, them, yeah, they, first it's very to, microbial.
First he had to defeat a centaur, then he moved up to a chimera, and pretty soon he'll be fighting the Hydra. It's very mythological.
We're talking about Jason and the Argonauts, right?
I hear the final boss is, in fact, a Medusa. So polish up that shield, kid.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that new God of War game. So, right now, in order for them to be doing that much, what it really speaks to is how methodical fucking Negan himself is in these ways. Like, I think he is being enigmatic on purpose. Like, he's not playing his hand even to his so-called closest right-hand guys like Dwight. And he pretty much just leaves him dangling on this whole promise of, like, you're hustling, keep it up, it'll be good. And he starts already fucking with him here again of like, well, I offered you a fucking trip to the pussy wagon for free and you're not saying yes. And he acts like, you know, there's constantly, I've noticed this thing, especially in this episode with Negan, of you're crossing me and I'm going to crush you for that. Ah, just kidding. Like, I'm not, you're fine. And like, he's constantly prodding people in that way. Like, that is, he is such a bully. Like, he's so truly, like, even when you're, you know, he's like the fucking kid from the Christmas Story. Like, even that little shrimpy kid who is his friend, he still treats him like garbage too. And he's just kind of like, ah, you're my guy, but fuck you, I might crush you too. Ah, just kidding, you're my guy. Mm. Like, there's always that dynamic here. And I enjoyed seeing that kind of brought to the surface here. But we still have no real understanding of Negan at all. He's a fucking mystery.
Yeah, Negan is funny because Jeffrey Dean Morgan, like you said, it's hard not to be entertained when he's on the screen. He says funny shit. He saunters around. His physical acting is one of the most impressive in the series so far. I thought Morris in there, David Morrissey, was great as the governor. But there's a physicality to Jeffrey Dean Morgan. The way he looms over people, the way he gets in people's faces, the flashes of anger. But there's this this cocksuredness in the way he moves around that I think is handled well just by his physical presence alone, despite some of the shit he says. There is something about him that is captivating. And that's what I'm saying. The showrunners know this. They're really leaning on him for his success. He always appears taller than people. He always appears above them. If you pay attention to the eye lines, he's always in a position that is superior to the person he is talking to. He's always looking down on someone, just in a way they shoot the dialogue. They're staging him in a way to continue to make sure that you know where the rest of these people stand with him. And then there also is this mystery element with him as well. There is something about the way he talks, like you just said. He starts to talk, he says things. He's constantly dominating the situation in a way that I wonder if it's beneficial to the loyalty of his troops. So he says things. He says, oh, crap, are you okay down there? Your penis? I mean, that guy, he clomped on it. Or is it down for the count? He says, I offered you something. He says something about, you know, I offered you the pussy bar. Dwight eats for free, and you didn't take it, and That concerns him, and it'll concern me too. So, and this is where I think, oh, and he also makes a reference like, do you want to get with you know who, blast from the past? I think he's offering him to bang Sherry, which is odd because Sherry and him are married. Obviously, that doesn't really sit right with Dwight. And I want to take a minute to compliment Austin Emilio, the guy who plays Dwight, because despite the fact that Jeffrey Dean Morgan owns every scene he's in, there's a couple of moments here with Dwight and the way he stops and he just looks at Negan, the way he regards him, the way he gazes at Negan makes me feel like there is complete and utter hatred here in that there is no real loyalty here outside of what Negan provides for Dwight. If things went poorly with the Saviors and the group started to fall apart and bad things happened, Dwight would turn on Negan in a fucking minute, in a fucking second. And there's nothing, there's no loyalty here. It's not loyalty whatsoever. It's total subjugation by the fact that he has a monopoly on the fucking power. Exactly. And that's the only reason Dwight even rolls up to him. Because if things got shitty, if there was a fire, if something bad happened, Dwight would not rally to Negan unless he thought Negan had a chance to re-exert dominance again. I think as soon as there's a weakness in Negan, I think because of the way he set himself up, that he will be fucking stabbed in the back. And that's the thing with Negan. I feel like that's going to be the way they're treating him as a bad guy. So he's not going to really have the nuance I was hoping for. I'm guessing not, which is fine. They're taking it in a different direction. I feel like Negan is somebody, because of the shit, it's got to be arrogance, because it's not ignorance, that Negan says, do you want a blast from the past with you know who? In other words, the woman I took from you, who's going to be your wife, who's now my wife, do you want to have sex with her? That shows you, and he does say, I'm kidding, but is he kidding? Was it a test? And this is where Negan is so awesome, because you don't really know what angle he's playing here, and he's very unorthodox. You know, he's not a, to use a stupid fighting metaphor, he's not coming at you orthodox and we're going to trade punches, we're going to go. He's fucking weird. He's got a weird way about him. You don't know if he's coming at you this way or that way. If Dwight says yes, does Negan bash his fucking brains in right there? I don't know. And that's what's good about the way Jeffrey Dean Morgan's playing this character is there's an off-balanceness to him.
Well, and he, you know, and this is pretty interesting as far as maybe it kind of pervades all of the Saviors as like an attitude. But there was that episode back when Rick and company extinguished what they thought was all of the Saviors and they kill all those guys in their sleep. And then the next day, Maggie and Carol got nabbed by those women and that one dude. They said on the radio, even they're like, oh, they must think we're stupid. And the woman of the Saviors was like, that's a good thing. And I totally see that with Negan of like, he plays up the, I'm just the charming, crazy bro. Like, don't worry about me. But he's actually super fucking keenly smart and very much reading and testing people all of the time in a very sadistic way. But he's not stupid. Like he is very clearly here. And this whole scene is him. Again, like you said, prodding at Dwight, testing his loyalty, trying to see, are you still really, maybe his whole goal in this interaction is like, are you still super emotionally explosive about the situation with your girl being my girl now? Is that something I'll have to worry about in the future? I'm going to poke you and find out.
Right. And I think you're onto something there because I don't really think it has as much to do with the answer as much as it does the reaction.
Exactly.
So Negan, put yourself in Negan's shoes if you can, okay? You have this guy's wife and you're fucking her, right? She's your girl. She screams out your name. You're banging her. It's a good time. Now, this guy works directly with you. This is a guy whose face you almost burned off. Now, this guy stole from you. He tried to escape from you. He's aggressed upon you as well. Who knows where that aggression started? Who knows how it all went down.
Yeah.
Right? You know Negan. You know that this guy's capable of killing. He killed Denise with a crossbow. And you say this to him, but you know he can't answer. You have to know he's not going to say yes, because he does say, I'm just kidding, lighten up. Part of me thinks that Negan is just gauging him, looking for any betrayal in his face whatsoever.
I think that's it.
I think if Dwight reacts incorrectly here, I think he gets his fucking brains bashed in.
I give Negan credit to that he wouldn't just immediately crush him out right here, but I bet he would have guys. He would be like, oh, okay, see you around. And the next thing you know, he's getting grabbed by all the dudes and knelt down outside in front of Negan.
Yeah.
Like he would make, I feel like Negan's the guy who makes an example of that. Again, in an effort to like reinforce this, there is no dissent. You're fucking loyal, all of you. And if you don't give me the right answer, you're done.
But he has to be smart, Negan does. He has to figure out a way. Maybe none of those things happen. Maybe he just sets Dwight up to test him further. And maybe that's what we're witnessing here. Maybe we're just witnessing a battery of tests, because this is a Dwight POV episode. So we know that they're going to try to color Mr. Negan in a way that Dwight views him, right? If they're showing us a POV episode for Dwight, we know that any interaction that Dwight has with Negan is going to be what they want us to think that Dwight feels.
Yeah.
And at the end of the episode, which we're going to get to, we still see continued testing. I think there's three interactions with Negan and Dwight. There's this one. I think there's one in the middle where Daryl's escaping, and then there's the one at the end where they're asking Daryl what his name is. In all three, Negan's very overtly doing this odd dominating thing. He's doing this weird thing that people do who know that there is no repercussions from you.
Exactly. Now,
this guy's doing it because he knows that you're not going to punch him in the face, right? Which is, you know, when you get people online who do crazy shit, they would never do that if they were in a room with you. They would never say half the shit they do. They're fucking YouTube comments. They would never say that shit if they were in a room with you, because they know that it probably would get them slapped in the face. And Negan's doing the same thing because he knows that the fear of the repercussion of acting out against him is so high. But he can use it to test you. If he probes at you and he prods at you and he sees weakness or he sees betrayal in you, I think that's the beginning of the end for you. Or maybe that's why he elevates people up. Maybe he tries to flip them. I don't know, but it's pretty wild to watch because he's so good at putting people on the defensive and keeping them off balance and disarming them, and it's just cool to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and he definitely knows exactly what he's doing. And I do think his downfall is going to come with pressing his own people too hard. Like,
sure,
he's not going to know when to let up enough.
And that's something we've talked about since the beginning of when we even speculated about him, which is when we learned about the Hilltop people and how they had to give up food and it was some crazy percentage. And you and I said, you know, the smart marauder doesn't squeeze everybody for their last drop. They squeeze them just enough to where rebellion is not worth it, because death is not worth it. You don't want to make people desperate, right? If you're going to be a marauder and you're going to hit this town, do you want to go in there and rape and pillage and burn and take everything down? No. You want to go in, you want to hit them hard enough that where they know you're serious, but not enough to where they want to fight back because they know they can survive on what they give up to you. And that's really the sweet spot with Negan. That's what he has to do. And I think we're seeing a man who really slams the pedal down a little too much and is probably going to cost him in the end.
Yep. I think that's it. I think that's going to be the long arc of Negan. And maybe that a big appeal that Rick made to all of the governor's forces that didn't work out because the governor sliced old Papa Herschel's head. I think that in the long haul, that approach might be what undermines Negan, that some of the saviors start to abandon him or question him or try to overthrow. And that's going to be the real thing. It's not going to just be, I don't know, some allied onslaught between the other communities against the saviors. I think it's going to have to come a little bit from within.
Yeah, it's going to have to come from within a little bit for it to be successful. I think it will be a group effort. I think we'll probably see them rally up the troops to fight back against Negan. But based on his behavior to date, I think some of it's going to have to come from within as well, for sure. But it's kind of wild to think about, man. I like the idea of the way he's operating. He's a different cat. With Rick and the governor, Rick was appealing to the governor and saying, this ain't your fight, this ain't your fight, blah, blah, blah. But the problem with Rick appealing to the governor in that moment was, even though Rick was reaching those people outside the prison when the governor was sitting in his fucking tank, the governor was still sitting in his fucking tank, which meant, gee, this guy who's pleading with us, who has, two skinny people up on the hill with rifles and an old guy, and this guy's got a tank and a bunch of other guys, like, it's hard to appeal to that situation, which goes back to the power of force, especially in this world. And that's what Negan has, and that's why it's so hard to contest with him, because he has the power of force. And he doesn't have to do much convincing when he just has raw, naked brutality on his side. It's hard to contest with that because people aren't willing to just die, which brings us back to this episode, which is where we have somebody who is willing to die. And I think that's going to be something that plays into the future of this whole Negan thing, and Dwight as well, is this guy was like, you kill me. Fucking shoot me. It's not worth it. I don't want to go back to that, which kind of tells you a little bit about how Negan is slamming his foot down onto the pedal and running these people fucking ragged. So he does send Dwight out, though. Even though Negan's like, send out Fat Joey. God knows he could use the exercise.
But no, he sends Fat Joe, the rapper, to fucking to handle Daryl, and he promptly fucks it up. And another thing I think is funny, totally right from the jump, fucks it up. But this is the second nerd programmer from Halt and Catch Fire I've seen on here. The guy, the right-hand man of King Ezekiel in the last episode, is a nerd from Halt and Catch Fire. And Fat Joe is a nerd from Halt and Catch Fire. And I can't stand him on that show, so I might enjoy to see him get killed on this one.
That's funny.
I'm gonna get my fantasy.
I don't know that show, unfortunately. So I can't revel in it with you.
It's another AMC show that they shoot in Atlanta, like I was saying. So it's gotta be really anytime they need some extra bodies, they're like, just haul over some of those Halt and Catch Fire people.
Send them in, man. It's cool. It's
just cool. Them in. We need more fucking ragtaggy looking people.
Right. So Fat Joey leaves the door unlocked like a dumb dumb. Daryl escapes into the hallway. He sneaks around. We go back to Dwight, who's walking his bike through the Walker mess. Looks like some sort of bad car accident. It appears that a car went over the overpass and plopped down on a bunch of walkers, I guess. I don't know, or maybe plowed into a bunch before it flipped over. Lots of walker slime. While Dwight's under the overpass, he realizes what happened, and a walker tumbles from the sky down onto him. Dwight manages to shoot him off a little bit, but we just see, in other words, we see Dwight going out to do a job that's not glamorous, it's not fun, to retrieve this guy, Code Orange, a grab and go. So somebody who's like, I'm done with this group. They have a code for it. I mean, this happens enough to where they have a code for it, which is exactly what Dwight did. A grab and go. Off he goes, he takes off. Which is funny for the Dwight character, who was once being chased on his own grab and go. Now he's pursuing somebody who's on a grab and go.
That is some serious fucking power that has worked its way on Dwight.
Yeah, yeah. In the chat, John David said, I thought he left the door unlocked intentionally to test Daryl. It seems like that is a distinct possibility because there is no repercussions on Fat Joe. You don't see him getting in trouble, which I would imagine he fucking would.
I mean, his rap career's in the tank. I mean, like, what else, what worse could he do now? I mean, shit. I mean, he had that one song with French Montana lately, but whatever. Like, come on.
Yeah. Hey, you don't get any fucking Twinkies, dude. So, based on the fact that there was no repercussions, my guess would be that maybe it wasn't an accident and maybe it was by design. That seems to make sense, actually, now that I'm thinking about it.
That's not a bad idea. And I mean, either that or Fat Joe is so wildly incompetent that he just truly didn't even fucking, I don't know. Actually, you know what? I think you're 100% right, John David, because I just realized if it were truly incompetence, Negan would have fucking punished Fat Joe.
That's what I was just saying. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There would have been repercussions for Fat Joe if it wasn't an accident, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought you meant repercussions on Dwight, and I was like, oh, well, you know, Dwight, you know, he was off fucking getting the other guy, but you're totally right.
So, Daryl gets confronted by Sherry while sneaking around. She says, go back while you can. Go back while you can. Whatever he's done to you, there was always more. She's warning him to go back. You won't get away, and when you are back, it will be worse. So I'm not sure how much time has passed between Sherry making a run for it and now being Negan's wife, but why do you suppose that she's taking this risk where this is clearly considered betrayal? This is 100% a disloyal action by her, unless she's a plant too. Is everything a fucking setup, right? I mean, what, if you're Negan, do you really want her running around doing this, or do you even fucking care? Do you think maybe she can talk some sense into Daryl? It's clear that, to quote Dwight, Negan has taken a shine, of course, to Daryl. Yeah. And is it possible that, you know, he just doesn't care that she's lingering around, whispering in Daryl's ear, telling him to fucking get with the program?
I could see. I still think that Negan would be pissed off to find out that she's been talking to Daryl, that this is his project to figure out and doesn't, you know, wouldn't want interference. I think when it comes to why is she taking the risk upon herself to go interact with Daryl, and I feel like I'm going to be stealing from one of our listeners. I can't remember who pointed this out. Maybe when we get to our listener comments, we can sort it out. But somebody did bring up the good point that they think that poor Sherry is seeing something within Daryl that Dwight is sorely lacking now at this point, that he has bent the knee to Negan. And even though she played her part in that as well, she's still seeing in Daryl, this is the person that in their screwing over, he has still, you know, stayed defiant. And I think that's part of what I like about Daryl in this episode, that he's kind of a mirror for the both of them, for Sherry and Dwight, that this is, you know, this is what Dwight isn't. And they both get to see that from the outside. Like it's maybe motivated Sherry again to like, I need to strive for this. And same with Dwight, of seeing he didn't bend the knee and maybe that is the right way. And maybe this isn't worth what I've gone through.
Yeah. It's possible she feels guilt around this whole thing because of what happened originally, which was them running off. I'm not sure what's compelling her, but I like your thoughts. So he manages to get outside with a bunch of bikes. Fat Joe and some others zeroing on him. We hear the whistling shit. Negan whistles and heh, 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 is his way over. We piss in our pants yet. We go to commercial. We come back. And that's when he's like, who are you? And he's pointing the bat. Who are you? And they're all saying, Negan, of course. I am everywhere, he says. He then tells Daryl that his life was about to get so much cooler. He presents him with three choices, the spike, working for points, or working for Negan and living like a king, he tells him. There is no door number four. Daryl just glares at him and then flinches when he goes for the fake bat strike to the head. What are your thoughts on this scene?
Again, this is our fucking Negan doing his games, his mind games. I'm going to fuck with everybody. Ooh. What I want to ask you, what do you think? If Daryl flinches from him coming to the bat, does he then rear back and actually bash his head in? Like, ah, you coward, you're not worth it.
No, I don't think so. I feel like if he is to recruit people into this movement of his, that he really does have to be a little bit patient.
True.
I do feel like that.
Especially if your whole philosophy is not finding people out there and trying to get them in, but stealing them, literally kidnapping or forcing at gunpoint people from other groups to come into the fold. Yeah, you're going to have to break down walls of resistance over a long period of time.
Right. I agree with that. And I feel like the only way they're going to really break Daryl down, and the only way it's going to really become interesting, is A, they have to break him. They have to get him to a point where he feels a certain way. But it is a process. It's a process to break somebody down. And in that, he is, I don't think he bashes him out here. I think he's just testing him. Again, I think that part of what Negan does is not just him trying to dominate you. He is taking a peek at your hand. When he flinches you with a bat and you don't move or you do move, either way, whatever your reaction is, he learns something.
Yeah.
So every time he does something with you, he learns something about you. And despite the fact that you stood there and you were tough, which Daryl was, that took a lot of guts to not flinch from a bat strike to the face. That tells Negan a couple things, right? The one thing we know about Daryl, and we've said this before, there's no creep to him. So with that being said, he isn't going to bullshit his way through this. It's not his style. So yeah. That tells Negan, A, this guy still looks at me in a way that Rick did, which I don't like, or B, that Daryl is not afraid to die and has nothing left to live for. Does that mean he's useful to me? Is he so fucking full of guilt about his dead friend that he could give a shit if he lives? Is that the kind of guy I want walking around my compound with thoughts and ideas in his head about fucking gunning for me? I don't know. So I think with Daryl, you're going to have to take an approach where you build him up. You give him a responsibility. You give him a project. You make him become attached to that project, and that project is somehow connected to you. Now, I'm going to conjure a TV show that I really loved for a couple of these seasons. I thought it was really good.
Who's the boss?
No. Hey. No. It's called Homeland, and it was on Showtime.
Oh, I watched the first three. Yep.
So the first three seasons?
Yep.
So with Homeland, and I'll be brief. You have a man who is a Marine who ends up getting captured by whatever fucking group is over there in the desert. And
yeah.
They break him down. And they break him down for a while. They take some time. And then they are completely and utterly benevolent to him. And they give him this project. And they're like, here is this guy's kid. I want you to teach him things. I want you. And he starts to grow attached. And it's never the face of the guy. So the guy that is benevolent to the prisoner is never the guy that goes in to torture him or deprive him or sensory dep him or any of that shit. It's a total different guy who says, you know, enough is enough. I'm going to get you out of here. I'm here to help you. So he comes in like the benevolent liberator, a different face. And I feel like that would have been, that maybe that's something they could have done with this. And maybe that's where Sherry comes in. Right? Something like that. Does Daryl really have a beef with Sherry? Not really, but he does with Negan and he does with Dwight. So I feel like that's going to be what has to happen with Daryl.
If you want
him to stay long-term loyal to you.
Yeah. No, I do think that we're going to have to see borderline a reversal of behavior. Like, I mean, Negan's going to have to really seriously inject Daryl's life with positives after this in order to rein him in and have use of him. To be honest, as far as like Sherry being a co-conspirator in Negan's brainwashing, I actually don't think Negan's that smart. I don't think he could have that many moving parts. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're going to find out he's a fucking Hannibal Lecter genius, evil genius. But I imagine that he feels, and this probably, I mean, we've seen it work evidently on Dwight. We haven't gotten the full story there, but taking all of these things away, smashing somebody down really hard, but then he, at some point, you know, this is the Negan we haven't seen yet, he gives back in a pretty substantial way, more so than just giving you your own studio apartment with a plush chair. There must be something more in there. He must really equip you. He must really... I bet we're going to even see a point where it's not Negan prodding for the weaknesses and the fault lines in you that he can figure you out and exploit, but also what matters to you, what's really important to you, and what things you feel like you really need. He finds those things and he brings them to you. Here's a brand new fucking motorcycle, Daryl, and here's an even better crossbow, and you get even fucking leather assless chaps to fit that vest. All of it. I'm going to do everything you ever wanted.
Yeah, it's a weird situation, you know. It reminded me of Homeland, where they break this guy down, they keep him confined forever, then they start to give him these things, and they give him all this freedom. And not only that, but they sell him on the ideology, and I think that's important.
Yeah.
Now, the difference here is, it's hard to sell somebody on the ideology when you're the guy that bashed his friend's head in. So that's where it gets a little tricky with this thing they're doing with Daryl, with this deprivation.
And that's, you know... Another thing they haven't done yet, we haven't, you know, Negan in his big speech to Rick and all of them, basically, I guess you could say, did a quick bullet point version of their philosophy of, you have shit, you give me your shit or I kill you. That's, you know, that's, hey, there it is. There's my whole philosophy. It's real simple. But there has got to be some bigger mission statement, I imagine, that he gives his commanders, his lieutenants, or whatever you want to call these guys. Like, there is some kind of... I don't know. There is an attitude that he imparts on these guys. It's not, you can't behave this way, do these things, and just hope that there's a unifying kind of attitude and culture growing. You can't hope for that. You have to make that. Like him as Negan, he would have to create some kind of code for them all to believe in, for them to think that it's right for them to behave this way.
It's true, but there's also the possibility that... In analyzing this, one thing to keep in mind is that you could, if you decide that you're going to up and leave, you're a pregnant woman and you have a 12-year-old son and your husband just died because of some crazy shit that went down in Negan's complex, even if you were allowed to leave, even if Negan said, yep, I understand that this happened, I understand that there weren't repercussions that were serious enough for you, whatever, you're going to part ways, that's fine, get your bag, get your stuff and go. I feel like one of the things that we do as Walking Dead viewers is we always put ourselves in the perspective of the people who are currently surviving, right? Which is, we know for certain that Rick and his crew are going to figure out a way to survive. But if you are in that situation and somebody just said, go, leave right now, you're free, some people are going to say, fuck, free to go starve and die, I guess. I mean, what am I going to do if I don't have survival skills and this Negan character boots me out of here? What am I going to do? I know the position I have now. I know I'm relatively safe if I play ball. If I leave Negan's care, I could come across a roving band of marauders or a bunch of psychos that have W's on their heads and be killed outright. At least here I know I'm not going to be straight up murdered, but I do have to fall in line. I think sometimes when we're thinking about this, we think, okay, it's not like you're leaving a job to go to another job. It's not like you walk outside your apartment and you might be fucking just killed by marauders and you're making different choices. It's a totally different world where they are, which is when you leave the security of the compound, you're really at risk for death relatively quickly. Or maiming, or sickness, or injuries, or that just not having a community around you. So there's got to be, there's a balancing point, which is how Negan can be successful, which is, do I leave? I mean, does Sherry really want to get on a motorcycle and take off? Do her and Dwight want to do that? when Dwight and Sherry took off with Tina and they took off with the medicine, and it didn't matter because the girl got killed anyway, the younger sister there. What was her name? Tina?
That's what, yeah, I think so.
When Tina got killed anyway, remember she got pulled into the grave. It was fucking hilarious. But,
that's right.
Right? Short haired girl.
Forgot about that shit. It was like in a greenhouse.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah, silly. But, and you're sitting there and Dwight and you are thinking, okay, my sister just got killed. What are we going to do? We have limited resources. They were willing to go back and face punishment of Negan than deal with the apocalypse by themselves. That is a massive statement to make. And it's a bit understated in this episode because they don't really focus on it. I mean, he talks about it at the end, which we're going to talk about, but that's something to think about. It's something to consider. Put yourself in the position of being out there in this world a couple years into this apocalyptic situation, and you have nowhere to turn. Where are you going to go?
Yeah. What it speaks to is just Negan's ability to provide at least the feeling that I can keep you safe better than anyone else.
I agree.
And your safety is worth kneeling to me and having to take my shit.
Sure. Now, that brings us back to Negan. You know, when they made this demonstration and they killed Glenn and all these guys, and I know I brought this up and I was just being a devil's advocate, but it bears repeating here, and that's this. They made a decision to go into that little area, Rick and his guys, and murder all those people in their sleep. Now, you could say those aren't good guys. Those are bad guys. That's very possible. Because they hung out with Negan, they're bad guys. Or they could have been guys just like Sherry or whoever, who's like, fuck, I got nowhere else to turn. I guess it's my turn to go into this place and watch this stuff. And in comes Rick Group and kills me. That's the apocalypse. That's fine. I'm not making moral judgments here. I'm just saying it would have been cool. It would have added a level of, it would have added a dynamic should Negan have brought that up more, or if it should come into the forefront. Because I feel like we're seeing that action is being responsible for the position that Rick and his friends find himself in because they assailed those fucking guys. And of course, Negan can't deal with that. He can't let that go unpunished. I just wish sometimes that connection was more explicitly stated as a reminder just to see how fucked up this whole situation is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And it shows that's even kind of the machine that Negan's built, where maybe even if Negan was like, ah, fuck, I don't think it's worth to put out all the resources to go and get these guys and punish them. But you have to do that. Like, you have started this monster and it has to be fed this way because you have made it hungry for this. Like, you have kept people afraid of you because they feel like it's worth being afraid of you because you can keep them safe.
Sure.
And in keeping them afraid of you to make yourself so powerful, you have to be this big bad, this big monster who goes out there and you don't just go out and shoot these guys on a mission. You drag them out and make a big spectacle of it and just smash their heads. Like, it's partly for, you know, I would imagine Negan's own ego and grandiosity, but that is public on purpose. Like,
sure,
he has this, you know, we talked about it, especially with Joe's group back when, you know, Daryl was with the Claimers, you know, that you have this kind of pack of bloodthirsty wolves around you that you've surrounded yourself with and you're throwing meat to. You can't one day go, I think this is kind of bad, guys. We shouldn't do this. Like, then they're just going to turn on you. Like, you have to keep feeding them.
Yeah, it's not strictly speaking only fear that keeps people in line with Negan. Negan is a provider.
Yeah. I think it's that I could imagine in his own mind that Negan has a small fear of, I have to keep this up or they might turn on me. Like,
I agree.
It's not just him perfectly, confidently, always indulging his ego of like, I get to just be the big swinging dick, swinging my bat. Ha ha ha. Everything's great. Like, I think in the back of his head, he's like, I got to be intimidating right now. I've got to, even if I don't feel like I have it in me, I've got to muster up being scary and intimidating again, or maybe all of these fuckers turn on me.
Yep, I agree with that. One of the things they're saying in the chat, Robert said, Dean, they were willing to go back because they were punks. He's referring to, of course,
Dwight and Sherry.
Thank you. And that could absolutely be the case. Because they can't survive on his own and Daryl can't. Absolutely. Daryl doesn't need Negan. Make no mistake about it, which is why they're going to have to appeal to him in a different way. And it's quite possible that Dwight and Sherry were punks. Maybe that's the case. We know how Dwight has acted in the past. We've seen him. We know that both him and Sherry ended up kind of backstabbing Daryl when they split after Daryl helped them. But we also know that if Dwight and Sherry have been involved with him for so long, that it's a very good possibility that because of that, they haven't honed their survival skills because they haven't had to. If you like the Alexandrians are a perfect example. They didn't know how to really survive much beyond their walls because they had so much of that stuff provided for them already. They didn't have to be combat proficient because of their walls. They didn't have to worry about that stuff. And that's something we've talked about before with this show, is that right there. Whereas Daryl has had to. He's a fucking ranger out there surviving on his own. He's done that. He's had to do that. It's just a real... It's just a different level of proficiency in how one can survive, I think. In the simplest sense, you're going to decide to do things to either feel better or not as shitty, right? I've said that before on the show. If you want to get down to basic human impulses, this thing I'm going to do in this moment, I'm doing to feel less shitty or I'm doing to feel better, right? That in a survival situation, that's kind of what it comes down to. Right,
fucking Negan. Oh hell, I just bash heads. It makes me feel less shitty.
No, but it might. But it might make him. It might be a combination of both with him because he's bashing heads because he knows that it will eventually lead to him feeling shitty when he loses control of the group and they pull him apart. Right. So I guess that's my roundabout way of saying that. I don't know, but that's Dwight. I'm saying. Dwight's thought process was, we can't survive on our own. We're going to have to take the chance of going back. I mean, that's huge when you know how Negan is. But it also shows you that he's still alive. He has survived. He's still out there. And he's still out there because of what's happened with Negan. Now, I don't know what kind of existence Dwight has. It doesn't seem like it's too great.
Yeah. It's better than some, you know, relatively speaking, some of the other, you know, lower caste system people who live there. It's obviously a little better than that, but it's not great. I mean, we see him bowing down literally, you know, multiple times. And,
sure.
You know, he's constantly at Negan's whim.
Right. Anyway, moving right along. Do you want to just talk about, you know, he ends up telling Daryl, you don't scare her easy. I like that. But Lucille, it pisses her off. She finds it to be disrespectful. Lucky for you, she's not feeling thirsty today, but I am, so I'm going to get me a drink. I like that. The men beat
you up. You beat him up, thugs.
Yep, the men beat him up, of course. And then we move over to Dwight pushing his now busted bike. His front wheel got banged up when he fell. Sherry saying, there are so many things I wish I never found out. I wish I didn't try back in the woods after I lost Tina. When we took your stuff, I told you I was sorry, and you said, you're going to be. I am, she says. Daryl just listened. Sherry could be interesting, I said. She could be an interesting character if, you know, we're going to have to start seeing the good part of being in Negan's world instead of the shitty part of being in Negan's world for me to maintain my suspension of disbelief that in fact people would go back to Negan outside of the intellectual blather I just gave you, which was they know they can't survive on their own. Okay, sure. But we need to see that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we got to see more of the compound, more of the people in there. And I mean, this whole episode being it through the view of Dwight, who's been very, you know, heavily damaged and slighted by Negan. And of course, Daryl, who's just a fucking prisoner, you know, in a dark room. Obviously, it's not a positive outlook on the saviors in the compound. But I do think it would be interesting to get another episode later on where we have an almost... not rosy look, but a very like positive look from other people who are living there, or other lieutenants and at the same level of Dwight who are like enjoying themselves, who are like, this is the fucking life. Like they are totally satisfied. Not a question in their mind about trying to overthrow Negan.
In the chat, Mando Tori says, Negan needs Dwight to still love Sherry or he has no leverage over him. What do you think about that?
That's a very excellent point. I think that's exactly it. I think that's why he asked earlier, like, oh, you want a shot at her? You know, it was a prod at, do I have to worry about you stab me in the back out of your, you know, emotional, you know, damage? But I think that's a really good point, Manda, that, yeah, he kind of needs that leverage to pull on him.
Right. I think so, too. That's a dangerous game Negan is playing, though, right? It's a dangerous game to think, all right, I need this. But to elaborate on Mando's point here, or at least to give you my take on his point, is this. If Negan believes that Dwight still loves Sherry, he knows that he has leverage over Sherry because should Dwight get out of line, Sherry's in danger.
Yeah.
In the
yeah,
simplest
that's
form.
True.
She's in danger should Dwight fuck around. Rick fucks around,
exactly.
Daryl's in danger, right? So
there
we've seen
go.
This. This is funny. This is such a medieval thing. And they do this Game of Thrones where they have these hostages, right? Oh, your family. Right? Your family.
He has a whipping boy for everybody. He's like, oh, you young prince, you've angered me again. Get me the whipping boy.
Yeah,
Time to smack the little thing you love.
But in a sense, it almost can be favorable. But so you know, you have this house rebel. And after you crush their rebellion, you're like, give me one of your 7-year-old sons. And then you raise that fucking son up in your house.
Yeah.
And they come to love you, even though you're fucking holding them hostage, in a sense. And hostage, you know, wasn't like this immediately. The hostage back in the day wasn't this thing that meant immediate peril. It was literally just somebody that you had, right? Where you think of hostage, you think of black masks and machine guns and 1980s movies on fucking airplanes. Like, there's imminent threat here. Not so much back in the day.
Yeah. No, it is true. And that seems to be a pattern with him, that he has personal leverage with people. We see him, you know, like you said, you see him do it with Daryl to have leverage over Rick and company. And he's got it individually. It makes me wonder how individually he does that. Like, maybe not every single. I would imagine that some of his guys, like Dwight, they are just more gung-ho, and he probably is like, I don't need to pull some shit like that with him.
Sure.
But with people like Dwight, somebody who already ran away once before, or people who he's a little bit in questioning of, I bet he does flex that more often of like, hey, you know, I can cut your family's, you know, food off. Like, don't fuck around. Don't piss me off. You know, I still am providing, and I can choose not to provide.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, we have to see something that compels people to do this, to where they don't just all assemble in the town square when Negan's sleeping and go, let's take this fucker out right now. Right?
That's it.
But if you see he's running a tight operation, he has this big thing, he literally has other groups bringing food to him, he seems to be doing pretty well. I mean, Dwight's sandwich looked pretty fucking good. There was an abundance of tomatoes and lettuce and mustard and pickles floating around. So
I think I even saw bacon in there.
There you go.
Oh, Jesse in the chat. The only way Negan's rule could work is if he has a large enough group of people who truly believe in him no matter what. And that's, I think those are his lieutenants. I think that he lives and dies. His rule is on guys like Dwight. Like, that's why he probably does poke and prod these guys so much in testing their loyalty, because he has nothing if these guys turn on him. They turn on him, it's over. Those have got to be the people who, you know, to be honest, he could be hated by literally everyone else that he, you know, that they extort, all the other communities, all the people who live within their compound, except for his guys with guns. Like, if those people love him and genuinely worship him, like, you know, we see them all bowing, that's the thing. I think this episode gives us the impression of like, oh, everybody has to bow to Negan. Oh, they must all be terrified. I bet some of these guys enjoy the bowing. They're like, ha, that's our king, fucking badass. It makes me a badass.
You know,
some of that shit has got to be going on, or else you couldn't keep this firm of a rule.
Right. I agree with you. I think that's the best way to do it, to convince people. The best way is to convince people, not only is this a good situation, but it should be celebrated.
This is awesome.
This is amazing. There are possibilities here for you, right? This is what, and you've heard me joke about this before, but this is where, when your country is smart, if you want a country to be successful and to be smart in the way it fucking controls people, you celebrate the fucking things that, if you were to strip them down to their bare bones, might seem pretty horrifying, right?
Right.
That's what you do, right? If, you know, oh, we're going to go over to other countries and, and do this stuff and all this crap, and we're going to celebrate, and there's going to be awards, and there's going to be medals, and it's going to be a few proud people that get to do this honor, and you build it up and you create this thing, and there are fucking parades and there are holidays and shit like that.
And straight arm salutes and all that fun stuff.
No, but you know what I'm getting at.
That's
easier than saying, okay, I'm going to conscript a bunch of soldiers into my fucking thing and have them go do shit. And you know, it's like the North. We've talked about this on the show before, where we talk about Saddam Hussein, and we're like, wow, look at how loyal his troops are and all this shit. Yeah, right up until shit gets ugly, and then he's hanging with a knife up his ass. So it's like, wait a second, maybe not so much.
Gaddafi,
I'm sorry. Either one of them, right? The other one got his fucking head ripped off. But
there you go.
But that's what I mean. That's a situation where if you're Negan, you want people to have that. There he is. Nothing makes me happier than taking a knee. Nothing makes me happier than snapping a salute to this fucking whatever it is, right? And I'm not saying a fucking lieutenant colonel is Negan. Relax, everybody. Stop with your fucking stupid emails. I'm saying that you want to provide that frame of reference to where people literally celebrate your leadership, and respect you, and you give them something to strive for, and that's what we have here. You know, we want to convince people, you know, not only do you love us, but you're going to give us half your fucking paycheck and you're going to celebrate it. And, you know, just stuff like that. You want to convince these fucking people that this is the right move and that it's awesome and that it's great and that you should have pride in this versus just making them constantly fearful, like, say, North Korea.
Yeah, there you go.
It's wild shit, dude. Whew. That's how you got to do it, bitch.
That's how you do it. That, if anybody else wants to start their Negan compound, this is how you do it. This is the blueprint.
Talk to me about Dwight and the Runaway.
Dwight and the Runaway. To be honest...
Oh, wait. Before I do that, can I just say this while I'm thinking about it?
Oh, sure.
Think of Ezekiel.
That's true.
Think of Ezekiel. He's got these guys. They fucking dress like knights. He's a king. He has pomp and circumstance around him. He's created this thing. Even though Carol can see through it as an illusion, it is something that has created a situation where these people strive and they want to do good and they want to advance in ranks. And they're like, I don't want to be a squire. I want to be a fucking knight too. And ooh, can I be a lord? Awesome. Right. And that sounds stupid, but they love it. And he's sold them on it. And he's used his charisma and his benevolence to create this situation. We're seeing a kind of a contrast in leadership style between Ezekiel and Negan.
It's just a dark version of it. Same thing.
I'm sorry about that tangent. Back to Dwight and the Runaway. Take me through this.
Well, this is a well done scene, but I feel like there's, it's one of the things where I'm like, okay,
brutal.
I get it. I'm like, okay, like we don't need that much. I'm like, it's terrible. It's not worth living. I don't want to go back because it's so awful.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, all right, cool. Like,
the dialogue was broken here. It was not good.
Yeah.
People don't talk like this. It's just a little too silly.
Yeah, I know. I think it was David Earle who was saying this episode just feels like so much fucking filler.
Right.
And this, to me, is the only scene where I'm like, we don't have to focus on this for this long. Like, okay, I get it. Like, right. We get it. You don't think it's worth living anymore. And it makes Dwight look that much more hollow for fighting for it.
Sure.
And this guy looks like a weird Mark Ruffalo. That too.
Yeah, it's just it's not worth it. I want to die, blah, blah, blah. And I thought it was kind of cool that Dwight shot him. I thought that was neat. I didn't expect that. And
yeah,
I really didn't
expect
him to have shot him in the back to bring him back because he knows Negan would want the guy back, right?
Yeah. No, that was the best moment of it, is that I thought he really did him a mercy. I thought it was like, oh, wow, Dwight, a little beam of light breaks through Dwight in this moment, and he spares this guy by executing him. Because he knows he'd rather be dead than go back, which he basically did, but still brings his corpse back so it can be on the fence, which is like,
right. The guy, he gets to him through his loved ones, which is precisely what Negan does.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll dig your wife's body up and feed her to crows and all this other crazy shit he says. And that's when the man actually relents, and that's when Dwight kills him. So Dwight wins, but he offers the guy death in the end.
Yeah. A kind of mercy. Which is not what Negan would have done, which, right, I think is really the main takeaway from this scene, is that even though it is a twisted kind of mercy, it's still a mercy that he does them.
Sure. Unless he's really, really brilliant, Negan's not going to suspect anything weird here, I would guess.
No, I don't think so.
So Dwight and Sherry have a little cigarette.
Oh, the saddest fucking smoke break in the world. Good God.
Yeah. He good to you? Yep. Good. You happy? Yeah. That's good. I did the right thing. It's a hell of a lot better than being dead. Yeah. Dwight leaves.
Yep. Bye. Aren't our lives great? Wasn't it totally worth it? Awesome. Mm-hmm. Ugh. It is. Yeah. It's just like you were saying earlier, like this is such a bleak entry into our view of the Saviors and their actual right. compound that it's like, God, it just feels so relentlessly crushing. But it's because of these particular characters and their particular backgrounds with Negan and the history that's there. Because I think there are maybe even a disturbingly high number of Negan's guys who are like fucking high five and happy to take that knee, loving it, thinking this is just the best fucking boys club in town. This is awesome.
Right.
And Dwight's one of the few people with the nuance to be like, I think this is maybe not so good.
Yeah, you know... And I know I've complained about this a couple times in this episode, and I don't mean to belabor the point, but one of the things I was hoping out of Jeffrey D. Morgan and all this charm that he had, because he was charming, he was funny, but he's also menacing because he cracks two people's fucking heads into little mushy cantaloupe heads, right?
Yeah.
And there's this menace to him. It would be cool if we saw more of a dynamic in him. And I hate to compare it to Game of Thrones, but there are times where a character in Game of Thrones does something truly awful, but then you really empathize with that character and you're like, I can't believe I'm empathizing with this fucking character, but I get it. Like, I get why you would do this. That makes sense to me. I get your perspective here. And when you can understand somebody's perspective, oddly enough, it causes you to empathize with them a little bit. Not saying you're going to cheer for them or you want them to win, but it does humanize them. It does round them out a little. And right now, Negan is not a human being to anybody.
No. Especially not to us.
Especially not to us, the viewer, which is unfortunate because I was kind of hoping that they would do that with him, to do something to show humanity. And I don't mean, I need to see him petting kittens and shit. I'm saying I want to see something that makes us not view him as this enigmatic, weird leader who might at any minute pop off or what have you. And I know that the show is more interested in making the audience maybe almost feel like Negan's men. We're not quite sure. I told you during this whole episode, I felt unbalanced. Like, what is he going to do next? He's like the fucking Joker. I don't know what his next move is going to be. I can't pin this guy down. But also because of that, I can't really empathize with him. Really think, God, this is tough for Negan. I feel, but there's no real parody. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm never going to root for him currently.
Oh, man. Those bat blows look real hard on Negan's back. Yeah. Poor guy.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess we'll see.
But no, I feel like that's the show has played their hand with their reveal of Negan at this point, and they drew that out. I think they're going to draw out the inner workings of him now. I think that's going to be a long... If I know anything about The Walking Dead, I think it's going to take a while for us to get the kind of like underpinnings of why Negan does this, how he actually feels about it.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to see... This is one thing I think is really important too. I don't think we're going to see Negan alone very much at all. I mean, we have literally not seen him in a room to himself. He is a public figure only right now.
Yeah.
It might be one-on-one, but we always see him with another person. Like, I am curious about what does Negan in his own quarters by himself do? Like, what is he thinking? Does he think about things? Is he planning things? Is he fucking reading old books? Like, is he in there just reading Moby Dick like a crazy person? Who knows? Like,
sure. That's what I want to see, too. I want to see a scene with him and Sherry where there is kindness there.
True.
I want to see something like that. I don't want it to just be like, oh, Negan comes home after a bloodthirsty day of menacing the fucking Saviors, and he just, fucking bends Sherry over, flips her skirt up, plants a hand on a shoulder blade and the other on the ass and just plows away. And then he's sweaty and he sits down and he's like, go get me a beer.
And he falls asleep. Like,
yeah, you know what I mean? I don't want to see that. I want to see something, some tenderness from him. I want to see... I want him to be humanized a little more than just being this larger-than-life villain.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's going to take a while.
Yeah, I guess I think so, too. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if they're going to do that, but I guess we can get to that. So Daryl and his music cuts off, and, you know, Dwight gets mad at him. You got your friend killed. I got Tina killed. Don't pretend you don't know the score. Daryl throws a sandwich at him. You should be dead, but Negan takes a shine to you. You're lucky. Don't forget. Dwight sticks the picture of the wall to of dead Glenn. Bon appetit. Daryl fucking ugly cries. Ugly cries.
That's it. This is ugly. Ugly crying.
Damn, dude.
It's brutal. I mean, you can't, like, there's no way you don't feel guilt and as Daryl in this situation for Glenn.
He hasn't ugly cried like that since he fucking knocked over the fish tank when he was a kid and the fucking goldfish just flapped around and then died. I could see him.
Or this is the first ugly cry since the death of Merle that we've gotten from Daryl.
Yeah, did he ugly cry for Merle?
Oh, he ugly cried for that.
He kind of ugly cried for Beth too.
Yeah, that's true. But it was like intense, like snot bubbly, like like ugly crying for Merle. And we got a little bit of that here. You could tell he was trying to tamp down the volume of it here because he didn't want. I still think in his head he didn't want people outside to hear that he was breaking in that way. But yeah, he still unleashes.
And you know what? I like the guy. I like fucking, what's his name?
Norman Reedus?
Thanks. I like him. Sorry, I had a moment.
You know, newcomer to the show, Norman Reedus.
Yeah, what the fuck's his name? I don't know.
Norman Reed? I don't know.
Yeah. Reed Ramis or something? I don't fucking know. He's in that movie with the other Irish guy. They shoot people. It's a good time. Yay. Aquitus Veritas shit.
Fuck.
No.
But no.
I'm sorry. Norman Reedus, right? I like him. I think he's a good actor. He's not getting a lot to work with here. He's just like, oh, they're like, cry, bitch. I don't know. I was too, honestly, do you want to know the reality? Here's just a look into my juvenile brain. I was just imagining Negan banging Sherry and it really distracted me.
Dwight out here still pulling overtime, having to cut up dog food for Daryl.
Yeah.
Sherry.
Yeah, and then he like barfs. I don't know. He's like that kid in South Park who just barfs when he gets stressed out.
He cries himself to barfing.
He cries himself to barfing.
This is an intense, ugly cry. We have to see this at some point. This is our reminder. This is, I mean, the most human moment of anybody in this episode. That Daryl in not bending to Negan is very much trying to keep his humanity. I feel like is the other kind of low-key, unspoken story of this episode. It's Daryl's narrative in this, and I like that. I like that even, and him crying like that isn't signifying him giving up either. I like that as well.
No, yeah, of course not. I don't think you break Daryl. I think you have to. You know, I think like most hillbilly bayou people, you have to trick and confuse them and trick them. You have to use trickery on them.
You know, like how you trick them out of their land so you can fucking put your strip mall there?
Hold on, man. You told me I signed something to give up a family farm, man? You're going to put a fucking Starbucks here over my dead body, man? I will lay in front of that goddamn load lifter, man.
Get over here, Merle. Get the goats.
Get the goats. Get the shotguns. I ain't letting them do any of this shit, man.
Well, it says here you signed it and it's, you know, this fucking...
No, I can't fucking read. Dirty Yankees coming down here tricking us out of our fucking land.
Poor fucking Daryl.
You gotta use trickery on him. He's not too bright, you know?
Trickery. It sounds like a fucking like D&D character. You're like, all right, Dean, roll for trickery over this poor hillbilly.
He has a regional negative on his will save.
I'm gonna make this hillbilly do a wisdom check. I'm gonna fucking ace this shit. Fucking brutal.
You know, sometimes you gotta fucking use tomfoolery on them.
Tomfoolery. Your Honor, I'd like to present he used all manner of trickery and tomfoolery to get me out of my shack.
And you know you're fucked. Because the dude, you know, fucking Daryl and his whole fucking shitty family with their fucked up teeth and bad hair and fucking discolored flesh.
They all sweat show Crisco.
Up. Yeah, you know what I mean? They all show up in the courtroom. And you just know that they're fucking public defense attorney, because let's be real. You fucking, with that those salaries, right? Daddy's in and out of jail. Fucking mom don't work. She's a drunk. They don't got a lot of money. So they're 100% using a public defender. And it's one of them, you know, stereotypical Southern film, you know, some movie where he defends the black guy that killed the white guy for raping the daughter kind of movie. Right? You know those movies. It's that public defender. He's fat. He stinks of gin. He stinks of gin.
Just mint juleps.
Yeah, he's a heavy set guy. And he has a button down and one flap of the button down's like not tucked in, and the fucking your honor's there. And then of course the prosecutor is going to be somebody like Kevin Spacey. This has got to be a movie. And he's like, some here one of them fancy talking Yankees from New York
coming down here to fucking all manner of tomfoolery, trickery, and fuckery.
That's it, man. Tomfoolery, trickery, and fuckery. I ain't bending no knee. I'm a hard nosed Confederate, man. I still got them stars and bars. You ain't gonna buffalo me, boy. But you might trick me. You might trick me with simple misdirection.
Oh, damn, look at him. He can pull his thumb off and put it back.
How did he know that was the black card? Man, again, he picked a goddamn card.
He took all my money.
I just can't. I tell you what, man. I swear to God, he just keeps knowing the cards, man. Every time he picks up that cup, that fucking walnut's not under there, man.
Damn, I've been on the streets of Manhattan for 5 minutes. I'm broker than hell.
I tell you what, man, that pretty girl with that fucking business suit on, I thought she really did love me. God. It's not your fault, guys. You know what?
I called the number that stripper gave me. It didn't work. Said it was disconnected.
It's not your fault, you know?
Jesus.
Lincoln attacked you with the North. It was an industrialized fucking thing. It's, you got nothing to be ashamed of. You fought real hard. It's fine.
building bridges.
Objection, right. Your Honor, on account of trickery and witchcraft.
Fuck.
All right, you want to talk about this last scene? Let's get the fuck out of here.
All right. I think we should close it up.
I think it's time to wrap this up because we're losing containment here.
You know,
we got a hull breach. We're taking on water. We're gonna have to we're gonna have to lock the bilge bay with a few sailors in it, or risk fucking sinking this ship.
Sorry, boys, you'll live on in our hearts.
We'll make a fucking plaque you and celebrate. Yay, we're bringing it back again. Woo! All right, done. Go ahead.
Fuck. I was talking to my dear mother about this episode.
Your
we were
madre?
Catching up. Mi madre about this episode. And she has a sharper memory for The Walking Dead than I do. Because she brought up this point. She was like, do you remember that episode where Daryl was holed up with Beth in that funeral parlor? And she brought up this little dialogue scene that I had forgotten all about, where they're looking at this stuffed chair, like this big plush, you know, leather chair. And Daryl was like, my dad had a chair like that. And I remember, and every time I think of my dad, I just remember all I think of is him sitting in that chair, just like menacingly, you know, you can never predict the guy. He's just this kind of menacing, inscrutable figure in Daryl's life who's always perched in this leather chair. The way earlier in this episode that Daryl focuses on the room that they're eventually say, hey, we'll give this to you. There's this big conspicuous plush leather chair in there. Sure. And when they go in there in this final scene, Negan is just fucking sprawled out, comfy as hell, big Papa Negan sitting in the chair. And she was like, I wonder if that speaks to any future feelings that Daryl has about Negan.
I like it.
Oh, casting him as the fucking father figure. Fucking eagle eye mama Anderson.
Shout out to Mama Anderson. I hope she don't listen to this filth.
Or else she wouldn't love me anymore, actually, I'm pretty sure. She's like, Matthew, we're from the South. You think we're all fucking idiot hillbillies? Are you selling out your own people to that filthy Bostonian Yankee shit, yeah. Dean?
And all Yankees are trickster lawyers who take advantage of Southern people and they make strip
malls. That's true. Now, that's just true. Okay, that's
true.
A fact.
That's true. Everybody in the North.
Fact.
Everybody in the North is a trickery in
just
fucking
a bunch of football deflating tricksters and scammers. All of you, every fucking one of you.
Oh shit!
Fuck. All right. Wow. I'm taking on so much water.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know if you heard, there was a bank robbery in Boston the other day. They're gonna suspend Brady for 4 games for it. Anything else you guys want to lay on him? Huh? Get out your fucking crucifixes and your torches, you fucks. Sorry, I'll be okay. I'm a little salty about that. Cost me an arm and a leg going after him. You want to talk about this whole thing?
Ooh, I think we should.
This is more prodding and testing and shit, man. This is nuts. You look awful. He does that a lot, and he also says, this is awesome. Yeah. I am Negan.
Well, and just pointing out, like, think about how, like, obviously it's not lost on Daryl how shitty he must look. I mean, he probably feels absolutely terrible. But it's him pointing out, like, oh, you just look awful. Like, he did the same thing, and then when they had him all out there with Maggie, like, oh, you look shitty. Like, it's this pointing out how shitty you are, and then take a look at me. Like, I'm standing, I'm looming above you. I'm fucking happy and healthy and fine. And in this situation, it's like, I can offer this to you. That's so he's like pointing out, like, you just look so bad. It's like a fucking car salesman, you know? He's like, you just, oh boy, let's get you in a new car. Let me show you this sweet new Hyundai I can fucking get you in.
Right. Right. I mean, it's only going to be $400 a month, dude.
Come on,
wait a second, man. Tell me where I got to shine.
You just better not be more of that Yankee trickery, boy.
I tell you what, anybody ever tell you look just like Kevin Spacey, man? sorry, I had to bring it back. Anyway, he talks about working for points, his super hot wife and her super hot sister. We talked about that. But, man, bringing up this shit with Dwight in front of Dwight, the looks that Dwight give Negan are just not good.
No.
Dwight begged him not to kill Sherry, which I thought was cute, so I was going to kill him. So Sherry says that she'll marry me if I don't kill him. It was a start, but it wasn't enough, so he got the iron.
Oh God. So brutal. Just laying it all out right there in front of him. In front of Daryl as the new prospect.
Yeah. You know, Jesse Bev in the chats says, I like these two personas. He keeps referring to what he wants and what Lucille wants as if he really believes it in some sort of mild silk personality in himself. I think that's kind of interesting. And it also adds a layer of randomness to Negan where it becomes a thing where you have to wonder that. It adds another wrinkle into the random factor that makes him so menacing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you hear that in so many accounts of, you know, like Saddam Hussein is a perfect example, like crazy dictators who it's like what made them so awful in a way also was just the randomness, the unpredictability of like they were in a bad mood. So they turn around and fucking killed a guy, like somebody relatively close, and they just whack them off. And I'm like, all right, well, back to the rest of my day.
It's like, I think you said whack. Did you say whack them off?
Oh, yeah, no, violent hand jobs out of nowhere. I mean, it's traumatizing.
God, this was so terrible until this dynamite hand job.
Oh, man, made my day.
Wow-wee. I'm bending that knee. So he does the whole, now look at him. He's one of my top guys. My point, I think you can be that guy. I think you are ready. He can tell him to look around. It can all be yours. He tells Daryl all you have to do is answer one simple question. Who are you?
And what he, you know, it just dawned on me, part of what he's doing here by, you know, he could have very easily gone, all right, you know what, Dwight, I want a minute with the boy myself. You know, I'm going to talk to him, you know, lay out the offer. But he keeps Dwight right there. It's part of motivation for, you know, he's like, look at him. He's one of my top guys. I'm saying this could be you. He's also poking again at sure. Dwight saying, your job's never secure. Like, don't think you can just rest on easy. Like, yes. I can replace you as well. So it's an offer for Daryl, but it's a warning still for Dwight.
Indeed. He doesn't do it. He says his name is Daryl. I love when Dwight starts to talk in... This is where Jeffrey Dean Morgan shines, in these little real human moments where he's like, ah, he like stops him. He's like, boom, that was just good acting.
Yeah.
He's like, no, let me handle this. It's cool, D. He made his choice. Ain't my problem if he made a dumbass choice. Tosses him back in the cell. And that's when Dwight says, you're going to wind up in that room or hanging on the fence. And Daryl actually says, I get why you did it, why you took it. You were thinking about someone else. Daryl says, that's why I can't.
That's my favorite line of the episode right here, is him saying, you know, you were able to lay something that you can live with yourself because you know you're doing it for the sake of someone you love. Where he's like, I wouldn't, you know, he's basically saying, like, I don't have that excuse. Like, it's going to be me throwing away all of my own identity and honor for the sake of no one, for me. It's just for me. Correct. And I would rather die than fucking do that. Like, he's saying, like, and that's why I do still think it is certainly possible that, you know, I don't know, Negan hauls out Carl or hauls out Carol or somebody else and says, hey, look who I found. I'm going to fucking smash her head in right now unless you say your name is fucking Negan. Like, I think that might make him stand up and go, yes, I'm Negan, like, in order to save somebody. And then he'll be forced, like we were saying at the very beginning, into that kind of Carol position of, I'm saying this, but I'm duplicitous.
Now, Psyche17 in the chat says, maybe he's thinking about Glenn. He can't bend the knee because Glenn got his fucking head bashed in, right? What would that say about, what did he die for in the end, ultimately?
Yeah, that he just, that, yeah, Glenn died, and then he still went to Negan anyways. Yeah, that might be Daryl's right? thought process, yeah.
So good stuff. I like what you're saying there, though. It's nice. I like the idea of Daryl annihilating his identity in the face of, he's not doing it for somebody else. And this is a real life thing a lot of people deal with all the time. Like, you forego your things and your dreams for somebody else. You have kids, oh, well, suddenly that paycheck becomes very important. It's not like you can fucking dilly-dally. And he's in a situation where it's just really resting on his soldiers, on his shoulders. And it's all he really has left is who he is as a person. And if Negan yeah. somehow takes that away from him, he's broken him in a way. He's taken away from him. He's in a sense murdered him in a metaphorical sense.
Yeah. Like, Dwight has the benefit of having kind of like an internal shelter in his own mind of like, I can rest easy. I can sleep at night with who I am because I know I only bent the knee and am playing along with Negan for the sake of this woman that I love. Like, I'm keeping people safe by doing this decision. It's like, yeah. and Daryl doesn't get to have that. He doesn't get to have that reassurance. Like, in his mind, all his people are back home safe. He doesn't know anything else other than now it's just me here. Like, any choice I make about bowing to Negan is my choice, and I have to own it entirely.
Floyd says, Lucille's always so threatening when he taps the ground near the bare feet. Wow, we all curled yeah. our toes. Absolutely. The sound of that wood clicking against the pavement, clink clink, around his little toesies.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very very visceral reaction to that.
Yeah.
So anyway, make it easy on yourself. I ain't never gonna kneel. Dwight says he said the same thing. Loud music starts. End of the episode. Right. Anything else you want to say there?
I don't think so. Other than, of course, we get the callback zombie of seeing the guy who he shot in as sort of a mercy that he went out there to get. Now as a zombie on the wall.
Yep. Yes, sir.
A little bit of a reminder, you can end up there too.
Yep, absolutely. Do you, I think that's it. Do you want to get to some listener comments and wrap with our final thoughts?
I think so.
Do you have the emails up?
I do. Do you have one you'd like to do?
No, let's queue it up and you can take it away.
All right. I've got from Mr. Robert Waltman, who is in the chat as Robert WNJ. He brought up, hi, Dean. Overall, I like this episode quite a bit, but there's some issues. First of all, Daryl will no doubt not break, but he will eventually play the game and fake being broken, as that's going to be the only way he'll be able to get out of the cell or not be killed. I think it was all a bit heavy-handed, and to be honest, I think Daryl could have taken a knee at the end of this episode, basically moving the story forward. We really don't need to see Daryl being tormented any longer to know that his will is strong and that he won't truly give in. Also, it seemed pretty obvious that Dwight will help Daryl or our group somehow. And what was the point of Negan telling the whole story of Dwight and his wife and how he took an iron to his face? That doesn't seem like something a leader would do to his right-hand man unless it was to ridicule or embarrass him. If that's what it was, then I still don't get why. I was also a bit disappointed that we didn't see the daily life of Negan's group, besides just kicking ass or chasing down a runaway or attaching walkers to a fence. Do they do anything else? Watch movies, listen to music, eat meals together, have any kind of group activities? There has to be some joy in your life, otherwise people would run regardless of the threat. And we saw, Robert, they watched old reruns of Who's the Boss? That's all they watch.
Yeah, good stuff.
You for that, Robert.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think it's good stuff. And I know he's listening, I'm sure. Hopefully we gave at least our opinion on what the point of tempting Dwight would be, maybe just to see if he can betray some kind of emotion that Negan needs to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Finding out things to worry about in the future.
You have another email there?
Yeah, you want me to read it or do you want to read it?
No, you got it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, hey.
Fucking K over here from Mr. Tim Lamb. Guys, this occurred to me this morning, and I'd like to hear your thoughts. We've now seen the hilltop, the kingdom, and the sanctuary all in a relative proximity to Alexandria. I mean, they're not weeks away. So my question is, how piss poor of scouts are Aaron and Eric that they were out there for years looking for people and somehow found Rick's group in the tornado-proof barn but kept missing at least three major settlements? I suspect fuckery and mayhap shenanigans. That is a pretty irrefutable point. I don't think there's any way the show could really... It's just suspension of disbelief.
There's some geographical concerns. There always has been with this show.
I was going to say, as far as the sanctuary, the Savior's place, I could imagine them being slightly more nomadic. Like maybe they more recently moved into the area from a smaller place. Like, oh, we got more people. We got to upgrade. So they moved and found the bigger, you know, warehouse they're in now. Maybe. But the hilltop and the kingdom, they've been dug in. They've been in there where they are at for a long fucking time.
Right. Yeah, man. It's crazy stuff. Good stuff from our listeners, as usual. I really appreciate it. Matthew, do you have anything you want to say about this episode before we call it a week?
I feel mostly tapped. I know some people are still iffy about Dwight, the character in general, and where they're going to go with it. I'm at this point, I'm interested. They've got me. I don't have the full hook through my cheek yet, but I'm like, okay, I'm interested. See, I'm willing to go on this ride, and I really do hope that the pressure on Daryl, like we've been saying, pushes him towards having some guile. You know, swallowing the pill, but not really. You know, I want to see. That's an angle we have never ever gotten to see on Daryl, and they are in danger. Like we've talked about even last season, of where do you take this character? This is a day one OG character who, yes, is beloved and is. You know, he's a badass and fights and everything, but what do you do with this person? Like, why does he press onward? What is he going to live for? And I think that this angle is an interesting possibility. I want to see Daryl actually moving up the ranks within, you know, the Savior Society and how he handles that. But I'm interested to see where we go with Dwight. I do think we are sowing the seeds for an eventual rebellion. I don't think Dwight is going to... We're not going to see a jailbreak episode. I think Dwight, at this point, could not be tempted into, well, I'm going to bust Daryl out because it's the right thing to do. Like, nah, I don't think we're going to see that. I think he's like basically like, Daryl, he's his own shit, but it does make me think about myself. And I think that's sure. What's going to be the internal seeds that sprout towards him turning against Negan, but not for Daryl's sake. So yeah, there are enough seeds planted in this episode that I'm interested. I'm intrigued. I'm ready to keep going.
It's funny because I think that Dwight, and they're talking a little bit about this in the chat. I think that that Dwight has this love-hate relationship with Daryl, and I'm going to try to explain it to you in my final thoughts, and that's this. I think that Dwight looks at Daryl as some sort of representation of what maybe Dwight could have been if he didn't decide to compromise himself ethically. And I think that's what happened to Dwight once upon a time. Once he decided to tuck tail and return, and I know I spent 15 minutes explaining why somebody may realistically do that. Yes. But I also think that when he made that decision, that if ever there was a strong principled character in there who would rather live by their principles than compromise them for the sake of survival, which I'm not saying is not a noble thing, but you know, put Captain Picard in that situation, he's not going to go crawling back to Negan. He's going to try to figure it out on his own. Dwight made a decision not to do that, and he's been paying the price ever since. And that's something that they've been flirting with throughout the whole episode. We're reminded of his beautiful ex-wife who's now boning Negan. We're reminded of a guy that gets walked out into the street who would rather die than return, a strength that Dwight lacked. And now we're seeing this guy, Daryl, who refuses to break down. This guy, Daryl, who part of Dwight may envy in a weird sense, that Daryl is making choices, and that Dwight's anger and frustration with Daryl is not necessarily Dwight's anger and frustration with Daryl so much as it is with himself.
Yeah.
He's yelling at him because he knows that he made a decision that Daryl didn't make. Daryl's making the principled decision. Daryl's making the strong decision to endure that which Negan has in store for him, rather than compromise his identity in a sense. That's what Daryl is doing. That's what Dwight lacked the strength to do. And Dwight's frustration might be part of it that he can't break Daryl, might also be part of it that Daryl is a reminder that Dwight didn't have the strength to do that. Correct.
Yeah. You broke, I'm not.
Right. And that's what I think we're getting to a little bit here. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing to think about. Daryl is this reflection, almost a paragon of principle that Dwight just is not. And it's funny that he's, you know, using his weapons and, you know, he's wearing his fucking angel wing vest and all this bullshit. Part of me think that that's utility. There's utility there because that's what you do. We saw him in the beginning of the episode stealing shit to make a sandwich. But then part of me might be like, there might be something more there. I'm not sure. But I guess we'll see about it. And that's all I got this week, man. And I think I'm done. Why don't you say anything that you want to say, and then we will get the hell out of here.
Oh, that's tapped. Y'all just be looking out for that Yankee tomfoolery and trickery. Stay afoot. Stay guarded.
All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning into another episode of the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. If you like what you heard, remember to share the episode with friends. Get us out there. Get our name out there. Help us out. And you know what? Check out LibertyStreetGeek.net. We got all kinds of podcasts over there. Plenty to listen to. Science fiction, film, Game of Thrones, True Detective, and more. All right. We'll see you next time.